Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our October 3rd meeting. If you all rise, please, and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. With that, if Madam Clerk will read the changes to our agenda, please.
You have several changes to today's agenda. Under added items for the consent agenda, item B29, submittal of a resolution correcting resolution number 2006-322, which was incorrectly submitted as the Flood Control and Water Conservation District, accepting conveyance from Laguna Vista Boat Club for the Oak Shores Emergency Access Project. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Item B30 is submittal of a resolution authorizing emergency work and contract change order for the construction of slope stabilization system on a portion of Burton Drive between Eaton Road, and it says Mail, but I believe it's Main Street, in Cambria. Recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. Amended items on the consent agenda, item B3, submittal of resolutions amending the fiscal year 2004-2008 Memorandum of Understanding for Public Services, Supervisory, and Clerical Units establishing fiscal year 2006-2007 salaries and benefits. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that the effective date listed under item 5, article 11, on the resolutions be amended to read October 22, 2006, not October 24, 2006. Item B4, submittal of a resolution approving the negotiated memorandum of understanding for the trades, crafts, and services units establishing fiscal year 2006-2007, salaries and benefits for unit members. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that, one, the effective date listed under item 15B on page B417 be amended to read October 22, 2006, not October 24, 2006. Two, the attached Appendix E be added to the staff report. And three, page B429, item M, be amended, changing the reference of Appendix D to E. B17, request to approve a fee increase and time extension for the professional services agreement with Wood Rogers Consulting Engineers for engineering services required to prepare final plans, specifications, and estimates for the Halcyon Road SR1 intersection improvements, 4th District. Recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that page B1710 be replaced, correcting a technical error. The corrected page is attached for your approval. Under amended hearing items, item C3, hearing to consider an appeal of the transient occupant tax, TOT, for Sycamore Mineral Springs, all districts. Recommend denial of the appeal and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that pages C3, 7, 9, 31, 37, and 48 be replaced due to a technical error. The replacement pages are attached for your approval. Under consent agenda, items B27, submittal of a resolution by Information Technology Department amending the position allocation list for information technology, adding one technical technology supervisor and one senior communications technician, and deleting one vacant senior network engineer and one vacant software engineer. All districts recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that this item be amended by removing pages 6 through 9 of the staff report, which were added in error. That's the end of all your changes.
We have a request, if you can repeat that.
Thank you. With that, we'll move on to our presentation. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Lenthal. Seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. A roll call, please.
Thank you.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shazian?
Aye.
First proclamation, if Supervisor Patterson will do the honors, please, for the 4-H group.
Thank you, Chairman Asashian. If you would all like to come and stand at the podium there, it gives me great pleasure to read this resolution. As a former 4-H member, I can relate to what many of these young people are doing. I would like to read a resolution proclaiming October 1st through 7th, 2006, as National 4-H Week. Whereas we urge our fellow citizens to observe this week by connecting with youth, friends, fellow employees, and relatives, and with school, community, and civic groups to engage in projects benefiting their community. And whereas 4-H is a community where young people learn leadership, citizenship, and life skills. And whereas 6.5 million young people touch and enhance the lives of others during National 4-H Week and throughout the year by doing good, by giving where there is need, by rebuilding what has been torn down, teaching where there was a desire to learn, and inspiring those who had lost hope. And whereas 4-H has been helping youth and adults learn, grow, and work together for more than 100 years, and whereas volunteer community service is an investment in the future we all must share, now therefore be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim the week of October 1st through 7th, 2006 as National 4-H Week in recognition of the fine achievements of over 1,500 current San Luis Obispo County 4-H members and their families, and tens of thousands of past 4-Hers and their families, and to acknowledge the contributions of more than 350 San Luis Obispo County adult 4-H leaders who volunteer their time and skills to the program.
Why don't you folks come forward, line up here, and the camera folks can take a moment.
Not there yet.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate your good work.
Why don't you, we have you turn around. If you ladies want to come up front and take a picture, that's why you're not rushed, and you can pose and... You're welcome to address the audience if you would like to.
Thank you very much. My name is Cindy Hansen, and I'm the program representative for the San Luis Obispo 4-H Youth Development Program. I'm here representing Richard Enfield, who's on sabbatical for this year. And I'm also here to introduce our 4-H All-Stars, who will make a presentation today.
Mr. Chairman and other members of the board, we are the new 2006-2007 San Luis Obispo County 4-H All-Stars, which is the highest rank that a 4-H member can achieve in our county. My name is Jonathan Bullock. I live in San Luis Obispo, and I have been a member of Edna 4-H for 7 years.
My name is Joanna Hopkins, and I live in Aurora Grande, and I have been a member of the Wasson Valley 4-H Club for 8 years.
My name is Jeremy Mooring. I live in Paso Robles, and I've been a member of the Estrella 4-H for 3 years.
And you can pull that microphone up so you don't...
Thank you. We are here today to thank the board for recognizing and honoring the many thousands of present and past 4-H members and leaders in our wonderful county by proclaiming this week as National 4-H Week in San Luis Obispo County. Thank you.
Thank you.
The San Luis Obispo County 4-H Youth Development Program has a rich history, with the first 4-H club in our county having been formed in the mid-1920s in the Edna Valley. There are over 30 4-H clubs throughout the county today. We would also like the board to approve the flying of the 4-H flag at the Government Center during National 4-H Week.
Consider it done.
Jordan's going to run it up.
Yeah. Raise it up. Stuart's
here?
Yeah, George's
sitting right over there. No, Dwayne. Need something heavier. On behalf of the 1,500 4-H members and almost 400 volunteer 4-H leaders in San Luis Obispo County, we would like to thank you for your support of positive youth development through research-based 4-H programming.
We would like to present to you a small token of our appreciation.
Thank you.
We were all just given pins with the 4-H motto, to make the best better.
Thank you. Are there any family members of the 4-H folks that are here today? If you'll all stand up, please, and be recognized and share the pride.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to have the honor of reading the next resolution proclaiming October 7 to October 15, 2006 as California, Mexico Bi-National Health Week. Dr. Thomas and his harem will come forward, please. I mean his ladies. Whereas the California-Mexico Health Initiative, CMHI, is a collaborative program of the California Policy Research Center of the University of California Office of the President involving California and Mexican agencies, whose objective is to coordinate efforts to improve the quality of life of working immigrants' families by promoting health and facilitating access to basic health services. And whereas CMHI is coordinating the 6th annual California-Mexico Bi-National Health Week, the goal of which is to promote a healthy migrant community by providing health care and education to prevent illness, thus creating a healthy lifestyle. And whereas Bi-National Health Week provides an opportunity to highlight the need for improved health care for those immigrants who are contributing to the economy in San Luis Obispo County and throughout California, and will serve as a basis for future bilateral efforts. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim October 7 through October 15, 2006, as California-Mexico Bi-National Health Week. If you'll come and accept this.
Dr. Thomas, we'll see.
Thank you very much for proclaiming this week by National Health Week. There are a number of speakers here, beginning with Isabel from Public Health. So each one of you can introduce yourselves, and thank you again for the resolution.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr.
Mr. Ruiz.
Good morning, Honorable Board of Supervisors. My name is Isabel Ruiz. I work for Public Health. As you can see, I have here many of the participants in Bi-National Health Week, community organizations, beginning with Arroyo Grande Hospital, Cuesta College, hospice programs, Catholic Charities. But also with me is here the Mexican Council and the coordinator of the Tri-County Bi-National Health Week.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. My friends, members of the Board of Supervisors, I feel really honored to be here this morning. This is not the first time I'm here, but this is the first time in this year because we have another resolution from Ventura County and from Santa Barbara County, but San Luis Obispo County is the first Board of Supervisors who give us this resolution. I feel really proud. On behalf of the Mexican Consulate, on behalf of the California Endowment, on behalf of the University of California at Berkeley, I just want to express my gratitude for your commitment, not just for the community of Mexican origin, but for the community at large. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Elvia Guizar, and as Isabel Ruiz mentioned, I coordinate the Tri-County's effort. One of the passions that I have is actually to see someone that we can alleviate the burdens and help somebody prevent a catastrophic illness that could have been eliminated by healthier lifestyles. That's exactly what we do with Bi-National Health Week. Since its inception, the beginning was 2001. It started with 7 counties in California, 6 states in Mexico, with the researchers from the California's universities. UCLA started at Berkeley, but many, many other universities participate as well. They saw the catastrophic illnesses that we both nations confronted and decided to do something intervention about it. It has grown to the point that now we have 34 states in the United States, although California and Mexico was the model. Now we have Canada, and we also have, of course, 28 states in Mexico. We have now Central America as well, and I really want to say that this effort could not be done without all the collaborators, as Isabel mentioned here. We will be, as you mentioned, it's from the 7th to the 15th, and we hope that the Magnum Conference for the Bi-National Health Week will take place here, and I vote here to happen here in San Luis Obispo County, and we hope to come and tell you about those events as we move along, and I thank you very much for your proclamation of Bi-National Health Week. Thank you.
Thank you.
There is one thing I think we should point out. I'm Anna Scott with the Rio Grande Community Hospital, and we're very proud to collaborate with these agencies to help the underserved. There is going to be a health fair, a free health fair, and screenings this Sunday at St. Joseph's Church, where many people who would normally not get a health screening are going to get a free health screening in various areas, and it's from 10 to 4. So that is one of the highlights of the Bi-National Health Week, and we're very proud to sponsor that.
Okay, give us the time and the date. One more
October
time.
October the 8th, St. Joseph's Church, Napomo. Many migrant workers who normally would not see a doctor at all are going to be getting free health screenings like we did last year and again this year.
And the hours are?
10 to 4.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Well, that will move on to our next item on the agenda, which is public comment period. And our first speaker is Mr. Richard Sadowski, followed by Adam Hill.
Good morning. Richard Sadowski, U.S. citizen, Morro Bay. First and foremost, I am respectfully and formally requesting that this board agendize a televised public hearing with the presence of Gerald T. Shea, the district attorney of this county, to discuss in an open forum his conflict of interest with regards to his involvement in the San Luis Obispo County Affordable Housing Program and his ties to the San Luis Obispo County Building, Planning, and Assessor's Offices. As a former employee of the Cayuca Sanitary District, I had the opportunity to work with the District Attorney Shea's permit facilitator, Jeffrey H. Edwards. While employed at the Cayuca Sanitary District, Board President Robert Enns insisted that I call Jeff Edwards on a matter of a will serve letter for one of Shea's owner-builder affordable houses in Cayucas. Mr. Edwards threatened me personally if I did not issue the building permit letter for the Shea project. Now, interestingly, this particular project had a building permit finalized, an assessment made of $244,527 underneath the affordable housing limit, It was sold for $1.475 million with escrow closing all in one day. This strongly suggests that Gerald T. Shea, the district attorney of this county, and his permit facilitator, Jeffrey H. Edwards, are abusing the affordable housing program in this county. In the interest of integrity, I respectfully urge this board to agendize a public forum with regards to the conflicts of interest and development in San Luis Obispo County with the presence of Gerald T. Shea here, preferably before the November election. Thank you very much for letting me address this board, and have a great meeting.
Thank you. Mr. Hill, followed by Julie Rothbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Adam Hill. I live in Grover Beach. I'm here today to make a statement about Measure J and the responsibility of public officials. Every impartial analysis done on the impacts of the passage of Measure J have led to negative and even ominous assessments. Studies conducted by Caltrans, SLOCOG, the City of San Luis Obispo, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and the Air Pollution District have all warned of the dangerous consequences and a proliferation of problems that would occur if Measure J passes. And the outcomes would impact not only the area directly affected, but would also be adversely felt throughout the county. I am happy to see that there are many public officials throughout the county, both elected and appointed, who have studied these reports and concluded that Measure J must be defeated. This is not about property rights or one man's history. What this is really about is the civic responsibility to choose the public interest over a private interest. This is about fulfilling your duty and obligation to the greater good of the community. And so I call on all public officials in the county, both elected and appointed, to study these impartial reports and come out against Measure J. The public places a lot of trust in your hands to make truly informed decisions about the future of our community. And the public looks to its officials for leadership. And leadership requires the open-minded willingness to sometimes go against friends and supporters and even personal philosophies when the greater public interest is at stake. That's what Measure J essentially comes down to. You can favor the facts and independent analysis and come out against it, or remain silent, simply siding with an expensive PR campaign. I think wisdom and foresight and the highest regard for the facts are what citizens expect and what citizens need from their public officials. The impartial truth is out there, and the public expects and needs its leaders to be the bold messengers of truth. Thank you very much.
Ms. Rothbold, followed by Tina Salter.
Good morning, Julie Rothbold, County Clerk Recorder. I was just came today to let the listeners and viewers know that the sample ballots for the November 7th general election will be in their mailboxes this week. Some have already arrived. If a voter has not received their sample ballot, which contains information on candidates and local measures as well as their polling place location and an absentee ballot application. If they have not received that by Thursday, it's very important that they contact our office so that we can get them registered in time for them to receive that information. The deadline for that is next Tuesday, October 10th. Any change of address or new registration has to be postmarked by that date in order for us to mail the both the state voter information guide and the state and the county sample ballot to voters. So pay attention. It may only be 35 days away, but we got to get you registered so that you can get out and vote. And also, Supervisor Ovid asked me about this, but I just wanted to report to your board that the governor did sign the bill that would reimburse counties for the November 2005 special election. So we'll be receiving about $438,000, hopefully sometime in the near future.
Thank you. Good news. Ms. Salter, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning, Board. My name is Tina Salter, and I'm here today to talk to you about the first annual Autumn Garden Festival tour that's going to be happening on October 8th. That's this Sunday from 9 o'clock till about 4 o'clock. This is going to be in the North County and in Atascadero and Templeton, and there will be 8 or 10 gardens that will show what you can do in the garden in the fall, because everybody's garden always looks great in the spring, but in the fall you find some different things, and there are some beautiful fall things, especially in the North County where we have the much more changes of seasons than we do down here or on the coast or in the South County. So I also want to thank your board, all of you, for using some of your community project funds to help fund this first annual garden tour. If anyone's interested in tickets, you can get tickets from the Atascadero Mutual Water Company, from the Templeton Community Services District, or from Bay Laurel Nursery in Atascadero, or from the Educated Gardener in Santa Margarita. I have posters here for each of you and bookmarks for each of you. And just remember, this coming Sunday, October 8th, and if you want tickets, call those numbers or just show up at the Colony House in Atascadero about 9 o'clock and you can get tickets for this tour. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Greening, followed by Marla Bruton.
I am Eric Greening. Good morning. And before I get into my prepared remarks, I would just say I share the concern relative to Measure J. I appreciate the meetings we had with the city-county committee, even though only one city was represented. We were encouraged not only to identify problems, but to look towards solutions. The problem is that if the problems exist in the measure and the solutions are not in the ballot measure, they can't be put in the ballot measure. The ballot measure is what was circulated last spring. It can't be changed. A lot of problems have been identified. We have speculated about solutions that might be possible somehow, somewhere. But what is on the ballot is the problems. The other comment I'd like to make is last Tuesday I left your meeting early and was in someone's car en route to another meeting when you reached the item about the federal lobbyist. Thanks to KCBX, we heard part of your discussion, although we reached our destination before I could hear your decision. I don't know if someone else raised the issue I'm about to raise. All I know is that, absent from your chambers, I was experiencing withdrawal symptoms as I reached for a microphone that wasn't there. Having expected this to be a discussion about having a voice on federal policies that affect our county, such as offshore oil, Bureau of Reclamation plans to pipe treated tailwater into our ocean, and the like, I was quite taken aback to find out it was instead about pork. How many goodies could this person help to bring in compared to what we were going to pay them? I'm not saying we should not be sure to get our fair share of federal investments, but I'm not comfortable with the assumption that the way to accomplish this is by more effectively milking the notorious earmarking system. I think the real need is to reform the earmarking system and to stand for reform. I could support having a federal lobbyist if it would be a person responsible for two-way communication and effective action relative to policy. If it were to be a position to bring home the bacon, regardless of the merits of the project, I would be opposed. I am much more interested in what we stand for than in what we can grab. Thank you.
Thank you. Marla Jo Bruton, followed by L. Barrow.
Good morning. My name is Marla Jo Bruton, and I'm from North Morro Bay. I'd like to speak this morning about an article that's on the front page of the Tribune concerning solar roofs versus eucalyptus trees. And the issue is that a developer, Jeff Edwards, is building one home, and it's on the border of Montana de Oro, the entrance to Montana de Oro. He's already received permission from Craig Smith and Nick Franco to clear 80 eucalyptus trees there. Now he's coming back and asking that about 400 more eucalyptus be cut. And he went through a litany of reasons why this needed to be done, you know, including restoring natural habitat and what have you. When those reasons weren't reaching approval by the community, he pulled out the new card, the solar energy card, the 100 million solar roof initiative. I don't think that cutting down trees, especially mature trees, is a solution. That helps, what am I saying, global warming. Excuse me, I have to look at this. Jeff Edwards in the paper, now the paper isn't always right, but the quote for Jeff is, "Solar is the right thing to do in light of global warming," Edwards said. "I want to do my part to inhibit global warming." I'd like to remind everybody at home, as well as people here, that trees are the number one essential filter of carbon dioxide. They take in carbon dioxide in their biological process. They put out oxygen. It's the number one. Trees are number one in keeping this planet alive, the oceans alive, us alive, air and water. So, I just really would appreciate some respect for trees. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Barrow, followed by David Dugan.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. I'm here today to speak on behalf of low-income housing. I know the board supports low-income housing. Market forces have made affordable housing unattainable to many, many people in the United States, as well as in our county. Los Osos, where I come from, is one of those areas that has been considered a place to go if you need affordable housing. And that situation is being exacerbated by a proposed $300 a month sewer cost. And I just, on behalf of affordable housing, I have helped with bringing some engineers together to design on my own an affordable type project, and that includes if you want to run that down, this includes the cost of a step collection system with on-site everything, piping, pumping, and everything like that, which is about $50 million below what the other proposed project is from Montgomery Watson. The second thing is, if you go to the next one, is a pond system. A pond system is a sustainable, low-energy system that's very environmentally protective. And I just spoke with the engineers. They're going to re-engineer this project. It was originally $8 million, and then for the nitrogen budget, it went up to $13 million. They think they can bring it in somewhere under $8 million at this time. As you can see, $8 and $20 million isn't a lot of money. We're talking $30, $40 million here, because we're going to reuse the water. We reduce the budget because we don't have to take the nitrogen and ammonia out. It saves a lot of money in capital cost, as well as energy costs. So it beats the governor's sustainability goals for 2006. And I'm submitting this to you to give to your engineering department as one of the alternative options that we can use to save us. And if we can make an affordable project for everyone, it will benefit us all, because many of the workers that are working in this county live in Los Osos, and they drive to work every day, and they're trying to find money for their insurances, for other costs, child care, what have you. So it's really critical that you keep an open mind on this. These projects were designed within the last year. They're using today's prices on piping and construction. So with that, I would like to say thank you very much, and you have both those CDs.
Thank you. Mr. Dugan, before you start, I have a question. Is your comment related to item G1 for this afternoon? Okay, thank you, sir. Please.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos, and a candidate for the Los Osos CSD, as Al is too. Los Osos, CDOs, and 2701. What happens with 2701, even though CDOs aren't even mentioned in there, is that now the community, specifically people in the prohibition zone, are caught in a limbo or caught halfway between here and there because the county may or may not take this project. They're going to decide in a year after 218, and yet they have no control over the sewer now, between now and when the county makes the decision. The reason I bring this up now and here is because we can't talk about this to the regional board. They refuse to hear anything about Los Osos at any of their hearings for some lame excuse as ex parte communication, which I don't believe really flies. The people who are being threatened with the CDOs have no control over what the district did, and they don't have any control over what the county may or may not do. So to try to push CDOs on the community at this time, I believe, is clearly wrong to begin with, because they can't do anything about it. They have to wait for you guys to decide. And I don't know if your board can do anything to affect the regional board, but come January 1st, it's going to be your responsibility to at least look at this situation. And somehow I believe that maybe you should make some contact with the regional board saying, hey, people in Los Osos have no control. These individual property owners have no control over their discharges unless they quit using their bathrooms and they move from their homes. We know it's ridiculous. They can't do that. So I would hope this board would consider some kind of communication with the regional board to discuss the problem, as Los Osos is now in limbo. It can't control any of this. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the last request to speak on our public comment period. Close public comment period at this time. Move on to our presentations. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Moved by Supervisor Lentol, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Unanimous. And Mr. Greek.
Thank you, Chairman Asajian, members of the board. We're here again for those folks that have been serving the county and the county's vision for the last 25 years. We have two employees we want to recognize. I would ask that as the names are announced, the department head please come to the left podium and the employees proceed to the right podium. Before speaking, please provide your name and department for the record. After the award exchange, the employee is invited to make a brief statement if they wish and proceed to the Board of Supervisors to shake your hands. So with that, let's start with the Sheriff Coroner and Sheriff Hedges and Richard Fuller.
Thank you, Richard. Good morning, Pat Hedges, Sheriff Coroner. It's certainly our pleasure, as on behalf of the Sheriff's Department, to recognize Dick Fuller today for over 25 years of service to San Luis Obispo County. Dick began his service to the County of San Luis Obispo in 1980 when he became a part-time reserve deputy sheriff. In April of 1981, he was appointed as a sheriff's correctional officer assigned full-time to the county jail. Dick continued to serve as a reserve deputy on a part-time basis until 1988, when labor laws prohibited full-time sheriff's employees from volunteering extra time without receiving overtime pay. In June 1990, Dick was promoted to the rank of senior correctional officer and was assigned as a jail shift supervisor on the night shift. In 1996, Dick took over the duties as custody training coordinator, a position that he still holds today. In this assignment, Dick coordinates and manages all entry-level and ongoing training for more than 160 jail employees. This includes correctional officers, supervisors, managers, and professional staff. He maintains complete training records and ensures compliance with Correction Standards Authority, the state agency that creates training standards for jails statewide. Dick is also an instructor for a wide range of custody and law enforcement training, including firearms, concealed weapons, baton, less lethal weapons, arrest and control, cell extraction, suicide prevention, and that's just to name a few. Dick has been vice president of the Deputy Sheriff's Association for 2 years and serves on the executive board and a number of committees that promote public safety professionalism. Recently, Dick was commended for his hard work in the design and engineering of a mobile firearm simulator for use by law enforcement officers throughout San Luis Obispo County. This unique training system allows officers to role play in realistic scenarios that are enhanced with high-tech video and audio scenes, which develop judgment and skill in the use of firearms. And a couple of you may recognize Dick as a member of the award-winning Sheriff's Barbecue Posse, where we're actually in competition with your board in an event sponsored by the Cattle Women's Association up in North County a few months ago.
You did good, Pat, till you got to that point.
The department extends its sincere appreciation and congratulations to Senior Correctional Officer Richard Fuller for over 25 years of exemplary service to the citizens of San Luis Obispo County.
We should probably let everybody know that the sheriff's deputy unit did tie the Board of Supervisors in that contest.
If you would like to say a word, Richard, please. Okay. You're welcome.
Okay. Next, we have Lee Collins from Social Services. I understand Linda Markey will not be attending, but we have a few words for her.
Thank you. Lee Collins, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. I will pretend that Linda is standing there at that podium and congratulate her on her service and note that Linda Markey has been the front door phone reception contact for over 15 years for adult services clients, families, and caregivers. She is an example of grace under pressure. When assisting an elderly or disabled person with a crisis, she is calm and reassuring. An exemplary employee, Linda is efficient in resolving eligibility and provider payment issues. She has a wealth of knowledge about adult services, and staff members seek her out for assistance with case problems. She maintains a caring and can-do attitude with each client, caregiver, and coworker, and has a smile for everyone. The Department of Social Services thanks Linda Markey for her service to the citizens of our community. And on her behalf, I will accept and deliver this clock. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next item will be consent, and I do have only one request to speak, Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening on items 1 and 18. Item 1 is about building communications facilities on Plowshare Peak, which is actually Santa Barbara County. I wonder why it's in front of you. It looks like it's in the Sierra Madre. My question is whether there has been any consultation with indigenous people. Mountaintops are often sacred sites, historically and presently used in worship. I would assume that one of the Chumash groups has responsibility for this area, although whether it would be Obispeño, Purismeño, Inazeño, or Cuyama, I don't know. But someone should know, and the concerns of indigenous people should be heard and addressed before this moves forward. B18 is an agreement with GEI Consultants to produce a feasibility study on groundwater banking in the Paso Robles Basin. This is connected to the storage and use of the unallocated reserve of state water that has not previously come into this county. The scope of work and the apparent assemblage of expertise in this company appear very thorough relative to the physical setting, the opportunity, and constraints. The stakeholder involvement component is also very much worthy of praise. We do, however, need to be clear as to what is not provided and not intended to be here provided. This study will not look at the ultimate use of water newly made available in this county, nor the environmental impact of such use. It will not look at the legal questions raised by the presence of this water beneath private property that currently properties that currently rely on their underlying groundwater to which they have established riparian rights. It will not look at the structure of decision-making relative to this water, nor to the relative power of the Department of Water Resources, Central Coast Water Authority, your flood control and conservation district, overlying landowners, the community of Shandon, ultimate purveyors of the water, or whoever else in decision-making. It will not look at governance issues of the Central Coast Water Authority, on which our county currently has no representation. It will not look at the relative distribution of costs and benefits relative to the many players. Fundamentally, it won't tell us whether this is a good idea, only whether it is a physically possible idea. Assuming you pass this agenda item, these consultants, you should know, will be meeting with Water Resources Advisory Committee subcommittee members and the North County Water Resources Task Force this Thursday, and the public is invited. It's at 5 p.m., Templeton Community Services District office across from the community park next to the fire station. So if you want to know more, meet the folks there. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else wishes to comment on the consent agenda items? Seeing none, close it to the public at this time. Bring it back to the board. Mr. Ovid.
Item B14, please.
Mr. Patterson.
Separate vote. Yeah.
Separate vote on B14?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mr. Patterson.
No, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Luntal.
B1, please, for comment.
Ms. Bianchi.
None, thank you.
And I want to pull B17 for a separate vote. With that, let's see, let's start in numerical order. Mr. Lentil requests information on B1. Is anyone here from staff that can comment on that?
Good morning. Paul Porter, Information Technology Department. With the comments to B1, part of the permit process by the U.S. Forest Service to obtain access to this communication site involves review by the Forest Service of a number of issues at the site, biological, botanical, and specifically they have a tribal liaison that reviews our permit application and has to give approval before we're even issued a permit to do anything.
Thank you. And Eric, I also have a comment on that it's not unusual for counties to have repeater sites or transmitter sites in other counties, because what we're doing is we're trying to ensure we have communication for California Valley, or about 1,175 square miles. The proximity of this site allows the signal to just basically go north because of the topography. And quite frankly, this is long overdue, and we've had some situations out there where we really need this communication site, and so I, for one, am very glad to see it come on board.
Thank you. At this time, I will entertain a motion to approve the balance of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Bianchi, seconded by Supervisor Luntal. Roll call, please. And that includes all the amendment of B3 and B4.
Yes.
As motion makers and second.
Okay, B4, I'm sorry.
No, this is the balance.
This is the balance.
B14 and
17.
And B17 are being pulled for separate vote.
And motion maker does include all the amendments as of this morning.
Okay.
With the changes as of this morning. Roll call, please.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Wenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. B14, Supervisor Ovid.
Thank you. I want to clarify, I'm only pulling this because I think that this item is not directly related to the county operations. This is the Proposition 86, and when I state this is that I'm not speaking in favor or in opposition to this. It's only that it's not been this county's policy to put its name out in support of or denial of propositions that would not directly benefit the operations of the county. The other ones, such as 1A, 1B, or Prop 90, to show an example, have direct relationships and costs to the county. I would recommend the board take a neutral position on this and encourage each supervisor to take their own position, but not as a county as a whole. And asking for a separate vote, if I vote no, it again, it's not in opposition or in favor of the position itself. It's only the board's policy not to be involved in those things that are directly related to the county.
Supervisor Bianchi?
Well, I see a direct relationship to health benefits to the county, and I'm wondering if Dr. Thomas would like to comment on that. I think it's easily as direct as roads.
Thank you, Dr. Greg Thomas, health officer from Public Health. Prop 86 would raise money that would support a number of things that the county is doing in public health. First of all, it would directly support the Children's Health Initiative, which the county is using some of its health dollars to do. Secondly, it would provide money for tobacco prevention, which is what our tobacco prevention program is doing. So it would support that. It would backfill some of the Prop 10 money. It would support community clinics and possibly allow us to use some of that. Those funds to support the community clinic. So in those ways, in those areas, it is something that would support the things that public health is doing. The other thing is that the most direct effect is that it's estimated that 750,000 middle school and high school students would stop smoking, and that would reduce, over the long term, county health expenditures significantly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The only thing I would say is that the only direct money that I see that will come out of this resolution would be to the backfill to the Prop 10. The balance of the rest of those are not directly related to programs other than what we contract with and provide. I do not have an argument that some of our policies and things would be directly benefited by this. But again, it's just the issue of taking position on something that's not directly related to the county, and I just wanted to express my opinion and make that vote known.
Okay, I would move approval of item B14.
I'll second.
Moved by Supervisor Bianchi, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. Does this require a roll call, Madam Clerk? Please.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
No.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Next item for separate vote, B17, if we have Mr. Ramey. And my problem with this that we're still moving forward with some expenditure. And my preference will be that since we have an EIR ready to go, bring that to this board, see which direction we're going to go before we spend any more money on this project.
Dale Ramey, County Public Works. We need to proceed with the design because of the EIR is going to come up with some recommendations for permits that we'll need to incorporate at that point. So we need to get the design up to the point that it's ready to incorporate these requirements. So I really urge you to allow us to continue on. We've had some changes with the environmental document as to who is monitoring it. It was originally with Dockin Engineering, and it has been moved to Wood Rogers for the completion, and there are some fees in here that cover the cost of that project management.
That's exactly my point, that this is because of the EIR, and if EIR, for one reason or the other, let's say, doesn't get approved, it doesn't get accepted, then this will be additional money that didn't give us any benefit. My other thoughts are such that This is requiring an extension of the bridge or some improvements to the bridge. And my from very beginning, my comments were such that why aren't we looking into widening the bridge and realigning at that direction rather than going through farmland and other problems that we'll face because of this project. And I was told that it's difficult to get all these permits in place, very expensive, and now we're going back into having to do something with the bridge.
Well, the deal issue with the bridge was we were lengthening it to help reduce some of the impacts to the 100-year flood. So we elevated it a bit and extended it beyond the banks of the existing channel, which do not affect the permit requirements for the channel. Okay. So we really haven't impacted the channel anymore with that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I, regardless of my feelings about this project, I want to do thank you for all your efforts. You've done an excellent job. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Patterson, Mr. Raymond? Mr. Patterson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious to know what happens with the project if these funds aren't approved. I mean, does it come to a screeching halt, or can other things occur to get us to a point where Supervisor Sajjan wants to make a decision on the project itself by reviewing the environmental impact report?
Essentially, the project will come to a halt. You know, we're using some of these funds to backfill some work that's continued on to keep the project moving. So we shut it down at this point.
Thank you.
I don't think, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Ramey, we won't be shutting down the project because we have what we were expecting to come in front of us. We went from negative deck to require an EIR. EIR is ready, and my preference is that this board will have a decision made on the environmental impact report before we go and spend any more money, because my thoughts are such that if the board chose to go another route than recommended, then this won't be necessary, and this money can go towards, in my case, towards Willow Road, which is on the top of my list of dreams to accomplish.
Well, I was just talking about the aspect of the realignment. The EIR process will continue.
The EIR process will continue, but we have the EIR ready to go, and do you clarify that?
Oh, the EIR is out for review at this point. Mm-hmm. And we are accepting public comment, so that will close in about 2 weeks. And with that, we'll prepare the response to public comments, and then we'll bring the EIR to the board December 12th.
So since it's coming to us December 12th, to me it's a benefit to wait for this item till after we've dealt with the EIR rather than at this time.
I think we make a motion. It's time to continue this item to December 12th.
Okay.
In conjunction with the EIR for the project.
Okay. There's a motion by Supervisor Ovid and seconded by Supervisor Patterson. But I have a light by Supervisor Lentil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Remy, I'd just like you to elaborate. If we have, for the sake of discussion, 2 months here till December, what is the downside from waiting? Because it seems like we're doing study. It's not that we're worried so much about the cost of a project increasing. We're not actually buying or awarding a bid for concrete, steel, or things that we've seen significant increase for. My understanding, this is mostly staff work by a different consulting firm. Can you elaborate on what the downside would be if we waited till December 12th?
Well, we are preparing right-of-way maps that will, you know, need to be in place. So if the EIR is certified on the 12th, we can start the negotiation process. We are running on a very tight timeline with this project. The California Transportation Commission has given us a very strict schedule, and we are attempting to meet that schedule. So any delay that we get jeopardizes us being able to meet the schedule, and we have about $2 million in SIP funds that are at risk.
Do you think we can meet that schedule if we hear this again on December 12th? I believe was the date.
I'm not sure, to be honest. So I'd have to sit down and take a look.
Thank you.
Mr. Patterson?
I actually have a question for Supervisor Sajjan, and that is, Are you feeling that this project, as designed, isn't the appropriate project for the area? Is your ultimate desire to maybe redesign the project or make it go away altogether? What's the actual intent?
Pretty much so, and I would like the entire board be able to hear from the public at large as how would impact their farm operation. I have two problems with the project. One, it won't add at a phase one. You'll have to continue to the phase two. At a phase two, as you go up to Halcyon and want to widen at the corner of Halcyon and Highway 1, you have to condemn a few houses by putting some people out of the roof over top of their heads. And I always have a problem with condemnations. So instead of for me to go to the far end to disapprove something, I'd rather think about it in the very early on before we spend any money. The number two problem I have with this project is that the money is coming to the tune of $2 million from Nipomo area. I agree with Mr. Ramey, there is a nexus. But regardless of the nexus, I'd rather see that money spent in the same area and maybe with some efforts be able to take it from the area to the following, to the next area where Willow goes through. And I think the community of Nipomo would rather see this money spent within their community, even not if not the area, rather than come to the areas of Oceano. And by having Willow go through, I think we're going to see less and less congestion on Halston or Highway 1 or any place else, and will be the best solution or any kind of a problem solving for the community of Nipomo who suffers from Taft Street being the only access to the freeway. I know that there is some STIP money that we're concerned, but I think with the effort of this board, we will be able, if so choose, at that time, go to SLOCOG and ask them to have this money move from where it is to a nearby area, which will be very much of a benefit to all concerned. And I think SLOCOG will look into it favorably, but that's my personal opinion.
If I might, my understanding is there's a project review that's on SLOCOG's agenda for Wednesday, and if this is an issue at that point, we can make recommendation either hold the funds or make it available so that we don't lose that time frame.
We can include that into the motion you made.
I'm just saying that all of us sit on that same board. I wouldn't think we'd want to do it. But if the issue is losing the STIP funds, you know, we can work through that to do that.
Okay. Supervisor Lentil?
That was going to be my comment. We meet tomorrow, so yeah. We can certainly address that because I'm also sensitive. I don't want to lose $2 million in STIP funds. However, I think if we can work together and perhaps get some answers by December 12th or perhaps even before that, that if you say there's a chance that we can still do that, I think that's something worth considering.
And if issues change, we can put this back on the agenda, yeah, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was going to make that comment. If Mr. Remy, you find out that time is critical, we can come back before the 12th if necessary.
We'll make it happen. With that, roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
No.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Mr. Edge?
Thank you.
That's on another item if you wrap that.
Okay. Let's wrap this up. This is for the consent. Would you like to go on a short break after Mr. Edge speaks his mind? Okay, Mr. Edge?
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chairman. In public comment this morning, you had a gentleman from Cayucas asking about or making some references to District Attorney Shea and housing project in Cayucas, asking your board to agendize a conflict of interest issue. I've just talked with the district attorney, and he has no housing. He's not involved in housing in Cayucas. He doesn't have any business relationship with Mr. Edwards, and he believes that the gentleman may be confusing Shea Homes with Jerry Shea, and there is no connection there.
And he wanted to be sure that this was heard prior to November elections, and Mr. Shea has already been elected with no opposition.
Correct.
So with that, we'll return at 10:20. We'll go on a short break here.
Oh, shit.
On.
Are we on? Mm-hmm. Thank you. With that, we'll move to our first hearing item for this morning. If Madam Clerk will introduce that, please.
Your first hearing item this morning is item C1. It's a hearing to consider an appeal by John Mack of the hearing officer's disapproval of a request by Charlene Mims for a minor use permit, DRC 2005-00148, to authorize the construction of a secondary dwelling 980 feet away from the primary dwelling, where the ordinance requirements would limit the distance to 250 feet. Parcel addressed at 7550 Mary Hall Road, approximately 8.3 miles east of the city of Rio Grande in the 4th District. Recommendation is for denial.
Thank you. Michael?
Good morning, Chairman Ashajan, members of the board. Michael Conger, County Planning Staff. The project before you today is a minor use permit to request to waive the secondary unit distance standard. The project site is located in the Wasna area, about 8 miles east of Arroyo Grande, off of Mary Hall Road. The project site's within the agriculture land use category. Here's an aerial photo of the site. The area primarily consists of lots of about 10 acres, most of which are undeveloped. This particular lot has access from both Mary Hall Road on the east side and Bernice Draper Court on the west side, with a densely vegetated ridgeline separating the two roads. Since these aerials were taken, the applicant has obtained building permits for a primary unit and a barn, both of which have not received final inspections yet. The proposed location of the secondary units on the west side of the parcel, taking access from Bernice Draper Court. And this is the proposed site plan. One major point to consider is the distance between the primary residence and the proposed secondary. From a linear measurement, this is 980 feet, but when considering physical access, it's more closely represented by the distance of about a mile. Access would be up Mary Hall Road, down Wasna Road, Muriel Bennett Way, and then continuing on to Bernice Draper Court. The diagram in green on the bottom left-hand side shows the topographical cross-section with the proposed secondary on the left side and the primary on the right side. This is a photo of the Bernice Draper Court side of the parcel with the approximate location of the secondary dwelling. And the primary dwelling would be on the opposite side of the ridge. These photos show the existing condition of Bernice Draper Court. It's a partially improved easement, which would require extensive improvement in order to meet county and CDF standards. These photos show the Mary Hall Road side of the parcel, which is fairly level and has direct access onto a county-maintained road. This is a constraints map that was prepared by the appellant showing various constraints on the site. It's intended to demonstrate that there is not sufficient area on the Mary Hall Road side of the parcel to accommodate a secondary dwelling of 1,200 square feet. Many of the constraints that are shown on this map are not currently existing. Staff also did a constraints analysis and found that within a 250-foot radius of the primary dwelling, which is the ordinance requirement, approximately 2.5 acres is the area of that. And staff's analysis, including both the existing constraints and the proposed constraints, including the pool and rear yard area and orchard, show that about 19,000 square feet of area would be available for development of a secondary dwelling. Staff believes that the applicant would be able to integrate a secondary dwelling into their plans. Additional concerns that staff has include fire safety and access. The project site's in a very high fire hazard area and is further than 20 minutes from fire response. The proposed building site along Bernice Draper Court would be 2,000 feet from a county-maintained road along a windy dead-end easement. The distance between the two houses, the primary and the secondary, would likely necessitate separate fire response, which goes against General Plan Policy S30, which particularly requires close approximation of residences for very high fire hazard areas. Regarding the access easement, a lot of grading would be required in order to bring that up to CDF and county standards to widen that at least 6 feet. And turnarounds or turnouts might also be required as well. regarding the secondary dwelling standards because of the distance between the primary and the secondary. Staff feels that the secondary would not be customarily a part of the primary use and not clearly incidental and secondary to the primary use, which is a requirement of the ordinance. And staff also believes that the applicant has not sufficiently demonstrated that specific site characteristics make the distance limitation waiver or make the distance limitation set in ordinance unnecessary. And given those concerns, one more thing to add. It's recently come to staff's attention that a guest house is being constructed on the property. The ordinance requires that secondary dwellings be on sites where guest houses do not currently exist. So in order to rectify that, if the board chose to accept the appeal, the applicant would have to construct a common wall to connect the guest house to the primary residence or bring that guest house out of conditioned space use. And so with that, staff's recommending denial of minor use permit DRC 2005-00148 based on the findings in Exhibit A. This concludes staff presentation. We're available for any questions.
Thank you. Do you have an aerial photo, or if you go back to the aerial photo where, since this photo, has there been any developments within the neighborhood?
Not that I'm aware of. I did check a few neighboring parcels. I checked all the parcels along Bernice Draper Court, and we do not have building permit applications in for any of those.
And what are the zoning in the neighborhood?
It's all agriculture.
Okay, with 10 acres, allowing a dwelling, with a secondary dwelling, main dwelling?
10 acres would allow a primary unit just with building permit approval. A secondary unit would still have to meet certain standards, such as the access standards. So if a parcel only had access on Bernice Draper Court, that would have to be paved the entire length back to the nearest county-maintained road. Otherwise, a minor use permit would be required to waive that standard.
And has the CDF recommended any recommendations, conditions?
CDF reviewed the project and prepared a residential fire safety plan. They did not indicate whether one site was better suited to fire safety than another site, although they have presented like a training session to planning staff to say that in particular long dead-end roads are something that they're trying to avoid having in high fire hazard areas because of the access issues.
Because my thinking was, when I was hearing to your presentation, when you have a house near another house, and if the unfortunate thing happens and one goes on fire, the chances of the other one catching fire, it's much easier than you're further away from the same location. Going back to the location of the secondary dwelling, can you go back to that picture if possible?
The picture of the site? Of the
right.
Okay.
Please. And is this as... Is this as is, as we see it, or this is not a computer drawing?
Right. This was a picture taken of the site. The black lines shown there are approximations of the property lines because there are several property lines around here.
So there is room to build here without... are those all oak trees?
I believe they are.
Okay. And has there been any need to remove any?
We haven't received any preliminary grading plans. The applicant's... site plan shows that the oak trees would not be in the area where they're proposing the secondary dwelling to be located, but we're not aware if the grading would require impact or removal to any of the oaks at this time.
Okay, and what is the topo on this? Easy to build or?
Judging from the site plan, it looks like it's approximately 10% grade.
10% grading, okay.
And the applicant's using a stepped design as part of their proposal.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Bianchi?
What's the minimum parcel size for this area?
I would guess because most of this is rangeland, the minimum parcel size would be 320 acres, although I may be incorrect on that.
And this is how large is this parcel?
The parcel is 8.97 acres.
How did it get 8.9?
This was a lot line adjustment, so I assume that they originally had legal lots, and it was just organized in this manner through the lot line adjustment process back in 97.
So it couldn't be divided down any further?
It would not be able to be further
divided. At this point in time, let's put it that way. Okay, thank you.
See no other request from supervisors, so we'll go to the appellant first.
Mr. Chairman, before you go to the appellant, Cammy Griffin, County Planning Staff.
Push the button, Cammy. So that way I won't ignore you.
I,
If I'm not looking that way, push the green button.
I will do that.
And I'll come to you.
It's hard enough to remember to push the red button. I did want to apologize. I had indicated to certain board members that the intervening area between the primary and the secondary was a swale, when in fact it's a hill, which means that in addition to no physical connection, there's actually no visibility. There's no connection through being able to see the primary from the secondary or the secondary from the primary. And one of the concerns, or one of the reasons that the requirement for grouping homes within a certain distance was created for secondary dwellings, was the concept of the compound. And this becomes especially important in an agricultural piece of property. Although this site doesn't lend itself to agriculture because of the large hill covered with oaks, still the concept was that by grouping the homes together, you provide a compound area with the remainder of the site available for agriculture. So I did want to apologize for the misrepresentation and also clarify where the distance requirement came from.
But isn't the concept, if you're doing a secondary dwelling, to have your in-laws to move in, that no visibility also serves a purpose?
Don't go there.
I'm biting my tongue.
Okay. It just happened that the in-laws of the applicant are in the audience. Okay, Mr. Mack, the appellant has 10 minutes, and since you're the appellant and applicant, we're going to still stick with the 10 minutes, and the other folks will have 3 minutes each to speak, and at the end of when everybody else has spoken, you have another 5 minutes, or any member of the group can take that 10 minutes if it's not you, anybody else can do that, 5 minutes to either rebuttal or answer some questions. So if you want to come forward, we'll start with you, and you'll be followed by Mr. Hardy.
Thank you. My name is John Mack, architect, representative for the Hardys and the property owners. I'm in Grover Beach, 1141 Highland Way. What we have here is we have a family that wants to have two residences on this property. And they're trying to make the best utilization of this property given its site constraints and characteristics. I wanted to clarify that we did have a topographical survey, one of which is in one of the slides that was presented and also on my exhibit that shows exactly where the tree line is. There will be no oak trees disturbed in this process whatsoever, either for widening of the road or for the placement of where we'd like to place a secondary dwelling unit. Not even any trimming of trees would be necessary. Prior to making this application and prior to even considering this location, we had met with CDF. They met us out there. We walked the lay of the property. We looked at all the site constraints and conditions, and they had no problem with using this access road. They did provide a fire safety plan. We concur with all the recommendations in there. It'd be very minimal to scrape the wider road, as you can see from some of the photographs that was presented by Michael, that all we would have to be doing is an all-weather road lane of base. They're not requesting for us to provide a paved road, but an all-weather road. With that, I'd like to share with you a couple exhibits that I passed out, one of which was already in the slide presentation. Thank you, Michael, for putting the colored one in the presentation. If we can turn on the overhead.
I don't know if the document camera is on. Can you see if the document camera is on? It is on. Okay, go.
Yeah, I don't know if we can see this.
It's difficult from here.
Eric, can you push the button to help him bring it into focus?
We'll work with you.
Just pull the microphone off of the stand.
Thank you.
Push the bottom and turn it on. Bottom.
Bottom push of the microphone.
And hold it.
Hold it for a minute. It takes about 10 seconds to come up.
Yes. Just go back there.
It
has to be recorded, so.
Basically what this is, it's a title report that we've acquired for the property, And with that, there are three easements on the property that I wanted to share with you.
Working now.
Mr. Mack, if you want to use that.
Thank you. Item three was an easement for a road. This was Tatar Springs Oil Company. It's for a road that follows the tree line in the rear of the property, actually the center of the property. Item six is for private road utilities and incidental purposes. This is for some power lines that are currently on the property. And number seven is for easement for electrical distribution lines, which is a PG&E easement. Be quicker if I just put this back up. Maybe. So with that, the green area is all the dense oaked area. The area around the perimeter are the setbacks. The red is the PG&E easement. The road easement, which I didn't identify, is actually behind the red easement, which is the road easement. There is an existing well. That's where the well is. It's in blue. Across in the orange area, we have a water tank. We have a power pole and power easements as well to existing power. We have a gas, our LPG tank, further down in the orange area. And in the purple area, we have our septic system. And you're supposed to stay a certain distance away from that, from county health requirements. So I just kind of wanted to show you my some of the other areas that aren't identified on staff's constraint map and some of the other legal descriptions.
You want to point out on the main dwelling, is that the orchard?
The orchard is a green area, which takes up almost two-thirds of the site. Oh, the orchard that we're planning to also place, our orchard is right here in the white area.
Yeah, the green area is pretty much the oak trees.
All trees, all dense vegetation, all oaks.
Okay.
The site map that's in your package, which I believe was page 31, I identified over here as location A. It's placed directly on top of the power pole and the water tank. It's not a suitable spot. B, location B identified by staff, is location put directly on top of the road easement. Item C, location C, is directly in the path of circulation and, I believe, too close to the septic system. We'd have to do some kind of engineered system, septic system. I'm not sure what. But my client as well is a contractor and has trucks and stuff and needs that maneuverability area to circulate his vehicles. Item D is actually placed in the orchard location. So with looking and working with staff, I felt that none of these suggested areas would work for us. I made a handout. I wanted to correct an item that was in my letter. I made a mistake, and in my letter, I had put CF, cubic feet. It was really cubic yards. It was a typo. I didn't catch it before it left my office. I wanted to clarify how much grading would be required if we did locate the home in this lower area. We have a soils report, and the recommendations is down in this lower area where we're planning to put crops and everything, it's fill, it's loose material. And the soils engineer says, if you want to put a building down here, a pad, you have to over-excavate 4 feet and recompact, 3 feet below footings. I highlighted those areas, 5 feet beyond the perimeter of the area. How I came to my calculation for grading, if we're to locate this down below, is number one, I wouldn't have the same solution as my hillside slope home, which is a stepped building, but I would have a perimeter of 1,200 square feet and a 420 square foot garage. And then per the soils report, and the excavation that was required would be about 406 cubic yards. An additional 100 yards for the slope, and for the access, an additional 222 cubic yards. So that's where I came up. If we didn't include the driveway, 500 cubic yards would be required to put the home in the level area. This is an example of the solution that I was going to utilize where I'm proposing the new unit, which is a superior solution for the location. The slope is exaggerated, but what I was planning to do, because the dirt is more stable, there's no loose fill, soils engineer says I can use raised footings. I trench for my footings, come up with a stick-framed wall on the downhill side, and lay my floor joist and have a raised foundation. This would minimize cut and fill to place the home. So with that, I'd like to entertain any questions you may have with the additional information that I provided. I do want to touch on an issue that Michael just brought up that was not in the staff report, and that is we don't have another dwelling unit on the home, I mean within the existing home. And Michael, if you can maybe back up a couple of slides, and you have an aerial.
Well, Michael is doing that, and I'll...
Or even a picture of the existing home would be fine, too. Yeah. Directly, that picture down below, the lower picture, not the upper picture, but directly behind the garage on the left-hand side, it's connected. There's a room there that's connected by roof structure, and there's a breezeway between. This room is for a pool room. And they're going to have a pool in the center of the court. It's sort of like a courtyard plan, the way the house is laid out with a pool in the center. So there is no nether dwelling unit, no granny unit, or anything like that. It's where kids can change their suits, an outdoor room that's not connected with the main house in terms of the internal workings of carpeting and this, that, and the other thing. It's clearly a room for activity and changing associated with the pool.
But if that was to become an issue, is there a problem by adding a wall?
Absolutely not. We can work with that.
Okay.
And work with the staff. But I didn't want you guys to think that now we're trying to ask for a third unit. That's not the case.
Okay. Thank you. I don't see any lights for questions or comments. We'll go to the next speaker, Mr. Hardy, followed by Jennifer Leninger.
Good morning, Chairman and Honorable Board. My name is Jack Hardy, and actually Jennifer and Paul are my kids. And it says Mims residence on here, but actually Charlene Mims was Paul, my son-in-law's sister, originally went in with them. But my wife and I are going to be buying her out of the property, and the granny unit would actually be for us, even though I don't feel like a granny. But at any rate, you know, one of the thoughts that I have, and I'm with Century 21 Hometown Realty and office in Grover Beach, and I'm not unfamiliar with land use and this sort of a thing. And I've been involved in a lot of projects similar to this, both selling raw land to people that had eventually built properties or selling them later. So I am familiar with it. And I, in most cases, agree with the ordinance of the 250 feet from the primary dwelling. It is a one-size-fits-all that works a lot of the times. But there are times that it does not fit, and I think this is one of them. When you actually go to the property and look at the topography of the property and the unsuitability of one of the reasons that where they're wanting to put the orchard. My son-in-law has had a dream for many years growing up. He grew up in Arroyo Grande of having some ag and having an avocado orchard. And for their kids, it was ironic that the 4-H people were here today, because that was something he grew up doing, and they have two children, want to have them involved with that and would give them room to do that. But where that orchard is, it's really not suitable, I don't believe, for building. You can do that, but it would be on fill, and I can tell you as a real estate professional, that's one of the disclosure items we always have to put in when we sell real estate, is the property built on fill area. And it would be better, we believe, to be on the other side of the property. As far as access, there is much easier access than going. You do not have to go clear back out to Wasson Road and around to Bernice Court to get to that. There are numerous roads around there. We've driven over there from the primary residence numerous times. It's relatively easy access. And as far as improving the road from Wasna to this site, I can tell you one of my hobbies is riding a Harley-Davidson, and I'm going to improve the road, be happy to improve the road because I don't want to slip and slide on a road like that going in and out of there. But I believe one size fits all is great a lot of the times, but there are times when I think you can make a decision to when it does not work, and I think this is one of them. We're very respectful of the oaks. We're very respectful of the land, and there's not going to be any need to remove any oak trees. I think adding ag to the ag land is a good thing. I think allowing to have the kids to be involved in 4-H out there and having the room to do that is a good thing. So we would just plead our case that you would allow us to do this. I think it'll make a great home site for this young family and then a place for my wife and I to retire. So,
Mr. Hardy, before you go, Mr. Lentil has a question or...
Mr. Hardy, thank you. Your architect said that you'd be agreeable to upgrade the road. Obviously, that's a condition for CDF. Wasn't there also a bridge or a crossing that the CDF was not be able to get through?
There is a bridge there, but the CDF did not mention that in there. I can tell you that there's an existing bridge that works fine for cars, but that would be something we'd have to look at. I would want to look at it. I personally have a motorhome, and I would have to deal with that as far as getting my own personal vehicles in and out of there, but they did not mention that in their report. But we would be willing and happy to do whatever is required to do that.
My concern, and you partially answered my question, is that it's one thing to have a road that's accessible by cars or light pickup trucks. It's another thing to run a 60,000-pound tanker truck over there when your house is on fire. So one of my main concerns is that would have to be part and parcel before I could sign off on something like this to ensure that you have access.
I personally have a motorhome that weighs about 48,000 pounds, and I agree. It would have to be something that would at least support that. And one of the things they have in there is they have the house sprinklered, which is perfectly acceptable and fine, and I would actually would want that. So
thank you.
We would agree to that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hardy.
Thank you.
Ms. Leininger, followed by Mr. Leininger, if I'm saying that correctly.
Leininger,
okay.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Leininger. I'm one of the property owners. And I just wanted to address a few items that Mr. Conger brought up, which was his feeling was that Mary Hall Road is a county-maintained road, and it is not a county-maintained road. The homeowners that live on Mary Hall Road actually maintain that road. So it would actually be in the same situation as where the home site, the proposed home site, would be. They're both maintained by the property owners. Also, I wanted to point out, I don't know if we can bring the map up of the parcel, but the way the Loomis, when we bought this from the Loomis family, they actually put this lot together.
Slow down.
Okay.
Oh, where is it? I need to point. Okay.
You need to go back to the speaker.
Oh, okay.
And we'll give you a little extra time for it.
Oh, cool. How do I? I have no idea how to use this. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay, you went too far that way.
No. Where is the red dot?
Right, there you go. It's not showing up
there. Okay. There we go. Okay. See this portion right here?
Mm-hmm.
That was actually the Loomis family added that parcel onto this parcel for the exact usage that we are proposing. They, when we purchased the lot, they told us they added that so that somebody, obviously not knowing what the county requirements are, but they thought, you know, what a neat thing it would be to have a primary residence here, and they did do a pretty, you know, a rough road, but a road up to this secondary dwelling site. And so, you know, that was their feeling when they did that. That was the whole purpose of them adding this parcel onto this parcel. So that was where we got the idea to do that, because when we first looked at this property, we wanted to make sure that we had enough room for an orchard, for horses, livestock, chickens, and those types of things for our children to grow up doing. And I think that was about it. I just wanted to thank you for your time and just hope that you guys will approve this, and because it is our dream to do what we are asking for. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Leininger.
Thank you, Paul Leininger. Thank you for your time. I don't want to be redundant here, but just to reiterate the same things. Where our house is located, the map is really hard to see exactly what's there, but John Mack did a very good job on showing you exactly what we would like in the proposed building spots. There is an existing well, our well, as well as an additional, they call it a picnic ground well, and we have to be 200 feet away from a community well for a septic tank. So the entire south side of the property is we are unable to build on. And where we have the orchard planned and the that area would be a good place for horse corrals and what have you. And to reiterate what Jennifer said about the property having two APN numbers, the idea came from the realtor that we can build a second dwelling there as long as all the conditions are right. But I just wanted to thank you for your time, and that's everything.
Thank Before you leave, though, Mr. Patterson has a question for you.
Thank you, Supervisor Sajian. Mr. Lanier, is there a well at the proposed site of the secondary unit?
There's not a well as of yet, no.
Okay. Are you planning on drilling a well or tying into the existing well below?
Our two options are that we haven't looked into it to see which is economically the best way to go. Mm-hmm. We could possibly trench up and over. The existing well is 20 gallons per minute, so that would fall into enough water and that would enable to support another unit, or we could drill another well, but right now there is not one.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mack, any closing remarks at this time? Because I don't have any other request to speak on this item.
No, I think everyone did a terrific job in presenting, and we await your decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Bring it back to the board at this time. I'm looking at it. I'm familiar with this project from early on, and I know that there are some issues, but from my point of view, those are issues that can be either conditioned or have some restriction on the uses, but as long as the applicant is willing to bring to face all the issues that related to the safety of the matter, I can support their request. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the biggest issue for me is the fact that it doesn't conform to the intent of our general plan. We've had appeals before us before where there were significant site constraints and secondary units couldn't physically be located within the 250-foot radius of the primary home. But the entire idea and premise of the secondary unit, as Ms. Griffin described, is to really make it part of a compound or complex that's developed on a site, keeping the rest of the site open. And the concerns I have about locating it essentially over the hill on the other side of the oak woodland in a very severe high fire area is, and even though CDF may not have called it out in their letter, it does require a second unit to respond in the event of a wildfire to protect that structure. And that's what CDF is charged to do. So it dispatches another unit to protect another home and stretches resources further. Plus, the fact that it requires such a extensive improvement to a road, an access road, to get to the site. And the only thing that I saw or heard about why you didn't want to locate it closer to the primary unit is really personal preference. There were some site constraints, like the PG&E easement. You can't build in that easement. You could certainly plant trees in that easement. And the one site plan that you showed as an option for locating the house near the orchard area would move from what I saw, four trees, and they could be located somewhere else. So I don't think it significantly impacts the orchard. And so barring the fact that there aren't significant site constraints, I think that we ought to stick with our general plan in this instance and keep the secondary unit in close proximity to the primary unit.
Just to follow up on your comment about responding to a secondary unit, but my understanding is that nearby those properties can have future dwellings, and the fire has to respond to regardless if where the second dwelling is or as how that community may grow in the future. Supervisor Ovid?
I was going to make a motion.
Okay, Supervisor Bianchi?
I have a question for Michael. Is the current house built on fill? If that whole area is fill, then isn't the current house on fill?
I'm not aware. Perhaps Mr. Mack might be able to answer that question.
Mr. Mack?
Yes. You want to come up, please, and still has to give us your name for the record every time you speak.
Okay. John Mack, architect. The current home...
Well, the one that's being built, the primary residence.
The primary residence, some grading has occurred to excavate and recompact and be built.
So it was on fill as well.
It was part of that fill site as well, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
You know, I'm not going to support the appeal either based on the general plan issues that Mr. Patterson mentioned, because there is a location between the PG&E easement and the road easement. All you need to do is turn the house in a different direction and it doesn't go into the road easement. We put these general plans together for specific reasons, and one of them is fire safety. Mr. Patterson and I probably are a little more sensitive to fire issues than usual because we're both on the County Fire Safe Council, and it's next January he may be the chair of it. So we're, you know, we are really concerned with the fire issues, and so I can't support the appeal.
Mr. Lanto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm also concerned with the fire issues, but it didn't say in the staff report here the agreement, and my main concern would be on this bridge at Tar Springs Creek, I think is the crossing there. And the only way I could support this is if part of the condition, or the condition rather, that not only is the road be brought up to CDF standards, but this bridge for, I believe it's 20-ton or 40,000 pounds. I'll defer to staff on that. But that's a key component in this, and that has to be, you know, first and paramount before anything can be done, because it doesn't matter where you're located. If you can't get the emergency resources there, you're not going to get help. And I appreciate, you know, your comments today, but with fire sprinkling and with the added improvements, if that was part of the condition of this, to ensure that you take care of the road and the bridge, then because of the circumstances, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and think that, you know, you can move something over there, because I'm not sure I'm qualified to be an architect to say whether you turn a house one way or the other, but that's the main condition that I'm concerned about is the fire safety also. So if those conditions were applied, then I could support this.
Okay. Mr. Yeah. Patterson?
I had another question.
I'll come back to you, but there is somebody else's slide that shows as a council, but I know that it's not the council.
County council.
I think it's council over here now, too.
It's council. Okay, is that you, Ms. Griffin?
Yes, that
one. I'll come back to you in a minute, and let me see if Ms. Bianchi want to finish your questions first.
What will be the, if the appeal is upheld, what will be the environmental consequences of that? Do we have to have a further environmental review?
That was actually going to be my comment. There has not been an environmental review completed on this, and so that would need to be done if, in fact, your board wanted to uphold the appeal. And the kinds of things we'd be looking at are potential impacts to the oak trees, and we don't just look at the drip line. We actually look at I believe it's 1.5 times the drip line. In addition, there'll be tank requirements for fire on both sites, so the potential visual impacts of that. The applicant mentioned trenching over the hill. Obviously, that would have an impact if they decide to do that. That would have to be reviewed. Any road widening. So I did want to point that out, that this has not had an environmental review completed on it.
Thank you. Before I go to Mr. Robert, just a comment about PG&E poles and wires. I, for one, never want to build nearby or underneath all the past history on Discovery Channels that I've seen. Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Yeah, I was just confirming with the staff. My motion was going to be to uphold the appeal and bring it back first meeting in December.
December 5th.
December 5th. That gives staff enough time, I think, to do the environmental and do the conditions.
I believe we would need additional information from the applicant, so a lot of that would depend on whether we're able to get that, such as a preliminary grading plan to determine what the extent of the grading would be and if that grading would have an impact on the root zone of oak trees.
So it'd have to be the first meeting in January then, because we have...
Well, let's ask Mr. Mack if he'd be able to deliver some of the requirements set forward by this board.
I've already done my own grading plan, and that would not be a problem.
Give us your name for the record.
My name is John Mack, architect.
Yeah. Okay, so if it
go for the first meeting in December, and then if it can't meet the time frame, we can change it. But it's to uphold the appeal and allow staff to put the conditions and environmental findings.
Would it be a tentative motion then?
This is a tentative motion, and again, I think I was going to ask a question about sprinklers, but you know, CDF is going to have to be is a requirement of those conditions, that they meet CDF standards. That's when I say that includes roads and everything else. Because, I mean, you go 1.5 times the drip line, CDF now has got a 100-year clearance or 100-foot clearance issue. So, I mean, those things are going to have to be looked at, too. Yeah. That's my motion.
You know, I'll second that. I'd like to make a comment on that. And also, I think by that time, it'll give you a chance to possibly drill a well or decide which choice you want to make, because you have a lot of obstacles to overcome or hurdles, and in order for you to adequately address that, I think you'll be able to come back hopefully in that time, and I see heads nodding, that you'll be able to not only answer those questions for yourself but for us.
Okay, with that, a roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
No.
Mr. Patterson?
No.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Next item, please.
Your next hearing item is item C2. This is a hearing to consider an appeal by King Ventures of the Planning Commission's decision to allow a commercial shopping center consisting of 6 buildings and 210 parking spaces. The applicant is appealing 2 conditions of approval dealing with required road improvements and the payment of road fees. The proposed project is located at the intersection of Heritage Loop Road and Nacimiento Lake Drive, 1st District. Recommendation is for denial of the appeal.
Ms. Nieder?
Thank you, Chairman Ashajian and members of the board. The appellant wishes to withdraw the appeal and is here to speak to that if you'd like to hear from the appellant's representative.
Okay.
Good morning, Chairman Ashajian, members of the board. I'm Rachel Covesdi, representing King Ventures, and we've been working very diligently with Public Works staff over the past few weeks and have actually resolved all of the issues, gotten some clarifications both for us and for them that actually makes this appeal unnecessary at this point. So with your kind permission and indulgence, we'd like to withdraw it.
Thank you.
And I think Richard Marshall is here to speak to any specifics if you have further questions as well.
Okay. Mr. Ovitt?
I have no issue other than, do you have a copy of that email that you give to the clerk?
I'll be passing out an email of basically the negotiated settlement that was worked out with Public Works and our firm. So I'll give one to the clerk and one to each of you for your review as well. Thank you.
I think the interesting thing here is when you look at the traffic study, this is one of those cases where it actually is going to reduce vehicle traffic on Nacimiento Lake Road. And so with that, unless there's any other questions, I would move that we accept a withdrawal.
Moved by Supervisor Ovitt, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. A roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. That will take care of our morning session at this time. Mr. Lindholm, if issues on closed session.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. At this time, the board will go into closed session to meet on the items which are listed on the closed session agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on items listed for the closed session? Seeing none, we'll adjourn to the closed session and return at 2 p.m.
Mr. Lindholm, how much time are we going to take?
20 minutes.
Upstairs?
That's the standard operating procedure. Or soap.
Or soap. How do you say it?
I turned the computer off.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board met in closed session on the items that were listed on the closed session agenda. Board did not take final action on any agenda item, therefore no public report is required, and that's today's public report. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Madam Clerk, if you'll introduce item C3, please.
Next item on your agenda is item C3. This is a hearing to consider an appeal of the transient occupancy tax for Sycamore Mineral Springs, all districts. Recommendation is for denial of the appeal and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Are you getting an echo?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Would it be Ms. Morris? The staff reporting?
You're on, right. No, you can sit here. Turn the red button off on the mute. Turn it off. Uh-huh. Now you're on.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Asajian, members of the board. I'm Bernita D'Ambrosio from the Tax Collector's Office. Yearly, the Auditor Controller's Office selects establishments at random to audit for the prior calendar year. In 2006, Sycamore Mineral Springs was chosen for the audit. At issue are the unreported revenues from resort fees, which resulted in a tax underpayment. County code requires hotel operators to collect and remit a 9% transient occupancy tax from any person who occupies a room for 30 days or less. County code identifies rent as the consideration charged for the occupancy of the space. The audit finding identifies the resort fees as an extra fee added to substantially all room rents and therefore part of the consideration for occupancy of the room. Sycamore Mineral Springs has appealed the tax on the resort fee to the tax collector. A hearing was conducted on August 24, 2006, pursuant to county code. Dwayne Leib, Director of General Services, acting as hearing officer, upheld the audit findings and stated the mandatory charging of this fee to all overnight transient guests. As such, the amenities covered by this fee are in fact part of the resort and its overall ambiance and are therefore thus subject to the TOT. Sycamore Mineral Springs is appealing Mr. Leib's decision. Approval of the appeal will set a precedent that the resort fees and potentially other fees would not be subject to TOT. Denial of the appeal will result in the appellant having 15 days to pay the uncollected tax penalties and interest. Tax on the resort fees subsequent to the audit will also be due. It is recommended that your honorable board uphold the findings and order of the hearing officer and direct the chairperson to sign the attached proposed finding and order denying the appeal of Sycamore Mineral Springs.
Does that conclude your report?
Yes.
Thank you. Any questions, comments from supervisors? Seeing none, go to the public at this time. This is an appeal. Representatives of King Venture, if you'll come forward and give us your name for the record, we'll give you 10 minutes. And after I go back to the public, we'll come back and give you another 5 minutes for closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Fred Glick. I'm the attorney for Sycamore Mineral Springs. Before we start the hearing, I have a request. I met with Mr. John King, who's the owner of Sycamore Mineral Springs, this morning. We met for over an hour and a half going through this issue. Mr. King, who, as you may or may not know, owns a number of hotel resorts, and this issue, it suddenly dawned on him, is a very key issue regarding the other resorts. He's requested that I ask you for a continuance of this hearing because he would like to collect more information with regard to Sycamore Mineral Springs. and also his other hotels as well, although they're not part of this hearing. I'm prepared to go forward if the continuance is not granted. However, in view of the fact that Mr. King now feels that this is an important issue that is going to visit him and all of his other operations, we would like to have more time to fully address this.
I personally don't have a problem, but let me see. I don't have any requests from the public to speak on this item. Does anybody in the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, let me bring it back to the supervisors, see what the consensus, and okay. I start with Mr. Lentil, since it's in your district.
Yes, I would support a continuance. Could you give us, Mr. Glick, 60 days, 90 days?
What 24th are you October.
60 days would be plenty.
60 days. Do we have time within 60 days, Madam Clerk?
You may, December?
You may get more time just because we're so busy.
When is that?
December 12th would probably be the, December 12th?
December 12th is...
Or the 5th.
Or when?
The 5th.
The 5th would be better.
Okay.
I'll come to you in a second, Mr. Seabuck. Okay.
I move the 5th is fine with me.
Okay. Let me see if Mr. Seabuck has anything to add to that, and I'll consider the motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Jerry Seabuck, Auditor Controller. In our view, this appeal is frivolous to start with. It isn't even a close call. As far as under the county's ordinance, the definition of what the room rate includes is very clear, and it's been consistently applied to all hotels within the county areas. Now, the issue of it maybe affecting some other hotels is not valid in our view, because those, I believe, are within city limits. Each city, like Pismo, Morro Bay, San Luis, has their own TOT ordinance, which may or may not have different provisions, and the precedent in one doesn't mean anything for the others. So we would oppose this appeal. It's time to pay the tax like all of the other hotels do.
Thank you, Mr. Seabuck. And my thoughts are, if cities operate different than the county, and maybe there's a problem there. If you're an owner of several hotels within the city and the county, it's always be nice to know that it's the same ordinance and or regulations that apply. Mr. Patterson?
Well, based on what Mr. Seabuck just said, I would like Mr. Glick to respond to that. Do you have other resorts and hotels in the unincorporated area? Because, again, the cities have different rules. And
we're reviewing the ordinance languages for the cities that he mentioned: Morro Bay, San Luis Obispo, Pismo Beach, Palm Springs, San Francisco. Most of them are very consistent. In fact, most all of them have exactly the same language under the definitions for occupancy and rent. The issue here, and I think Mr. Seabuck was not very accurate, as far as the definitions, what we're talking about are not just hotels. We're talking about resort hotels, which carry a lot more amenities than simply a room, okay? They offer other services that are not typically offered by a regular hotel. The issue here is a resort fee, okay? That is not anywhere in your definition, in your county ordinance, under TOT. As a matter of fact, the definition is very clear. I don't want to argue the case. I'm just saying there are some really serious issues, and we need to address them on all of the hotels. He indicates that he believes we can develop more information on Sycamore Mineral Springs than I presently have. I would like to get that if that's possible.
Okay. It would change the, if you continue it for another 2 months, it would change the penalty fee, I assume. And you're...
Oh, we're willing to.
Yeah.
Yeah. We would incur more penalties if you did not uphold the appeal.
Ms. Bianchi?
Well, it would be nice to have them all the same, but there is absolutely no way that our county can order the cities to make their ordinances comply with ours and vice versa. So they'll never, probably never be the same.
Probably not, but what we're going to be doing if for instance, our appeal fails, we'll probably be taking this to court. It's that big of an issue based on all of these different operations that he has because it's a substantial amount of money.
No, you were talking about resorts and other hotels don't offer resort fees, and I was staring at the ceiling as I was going through all of the...
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, all of the places I've stayed. you know, most of them have amenities of some kind or other. They may not be considered a resort, but they all have amenities, and those are included in the tax.
Yeah, I think you'll find, for instance, Sycamore Mineral Springs is much more unique than that, in that they're offer it's a wellness center there as well as a resort. So there's a lot going on there.
Supervisor Lentil?
Mr. Chair, if Mr. Glick is willing to take on the additional penalty with the time delay, I think it would be appropriate to give him the opportunity to come back in 60 days with the understanding that it could cost him more money. I mean, it's a chance they're going to take, but if he says he has more information and recent information, I think the reasonable thing to do is to allow him that request.
Okay, December 5th is the date, and there's that's your motion.
Yes, sir.
Is there a second to the motion? I'll second the motion. Would that a roll call, please?
Mr. Lentil?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
No.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Okay, we'll move on to the... Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we'll move to the next item, please, Madam Clerk.
The next item on your agenda is item C4. This is a hearing to consider an approval of an appropriation transfer in the amount of $179,877 from unanticipated revenue, SLESF funds, and amend the fixed asset list and operating budget to allow for purchases of additional equipment, significant value items for the crime laboratory, and the CLETS server. All district recommendation is for approval.
Thank you. Sheriff Hedges, do the honors.
Yes, good afternoon. Pat Hedges, Sheriff Coroner. This is a reallocation of some unspent funds that we currently have a need for within the department. I'm actually going to try my best luck at one of these items, which is a gas chromatographs mass spectrometer, which, easy for me to say, is to upgrade our lab, which we recently established from a manual process to an automated process, and we'll also be able to expand the types of items that we can process in the laboratory for analysis. It includes $37,000 for a CLETS server that serves all of the cities and the county as well, and also about $27,000 to begin our replacement phase for handheld radios for our sworn staff out in the field. Total of $179,877.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovitt, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. Under discussion, Supervisor Lentil.
Yes, Sheriff, I just want to publicly thank you because I've seen several times when this crime lab on a regional basis has made cases that otherwise would basically not be made. We've seen convictions. This is technology. This is a tremendous investment in our law enforcement, our ability to make those tough cases. And I commend your staff, especially those in the crime lab that run this equipment that obviously spell it and pronounce it better than you or I. But this is something that's long overdue. And I thank you for the work for your department for doing it.
Well, thank you. And we're fortunate that we're able to be able to provide this service countywide to all the law enforcement agencies in the county.
With that, a roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Lentham?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt? I mean, Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Oh, that's the difference.
Okay. Thank you, Sheriff. Next item, please.
The next item on your agenda is item D1. This is consideration of an introduction of an ordinance amending section 2.48.095 of the county code relating to the Board of Supervisors' salary, all district. Recommendations for approval and instruct the clerk to give notice of public hearing set for October 17, 2006 at 9 a.m.
Okay. I see. With that couple seconds of heavy breathing, and here comes Ms. Wilcox with the reporting.
She doesn't need to catch up.
It's twice you made me run today. Members of the board, Gail Wilcox, Deputy CAO. Richard Greek actually was expected to introduce this item, so if he wanders in about an hour and a half from now and starts talking about the board's salary, that's why, because we were anticipating 3:30-ish. You saw, I'll keep my comments brief. I know you want to get to the Los Osos sewer item this afternoon. The item from Richard Greek basically outlines that if you followed the existing procedure for setting the board's salary, you would be looking at approximately 2.82% salary increase. That would be based on the five counties that are listed in your board packet today. And those are the five that are reflected in the existing ordinance. It's Kern, Monterey, Santa Barbara, Santa Cruz, and Merced counties. What's happened is sometime in the last 8 to 10 years, we don't have all the records in the personnel department, but preceding boards have elected to decline several of the annual raises. And because of the ordinance language, which says that the ordinance language doesn't currently read that you are paid the average of the comparable counties, rather it reads that your annual increase will reflect the average increase in the other counties. And so when you decline an increase in any given year, you automatically put your salary behind the average of the other counties. And so as you read in the staff report, you are currently 15%, even with the 2.82% increase that Richard outlined, you will be 15% below the average of the five counties that you're currently comparing with. And further, you are 23% below, or you would be 23% below, the five counties if you dropped Kern County and Merced County and added Marin and Napa. And I bring that up because for just about all your bargaining units, including management and confidential, you are using Marin and Napa as comparables. I think that's important because when we look at comparables, we focus on things like housing costs and size of the budget, number of county employees, and I think that few people would argue that Kern and Merced County really are not comparable to San Luis Obispo County, certainly when it comes to housing costs, and with Kern, certainly when it comes to the size of the budget and number of county employees, et cetera. So I'll give it over to Richard if he wants to add anything in a minute. We have a couple different ordinances before you, and we're looking for direction. One basically would implement the 2.82 salary increase in January 2007. The other one is the one that I'm pitching to you that my recommendation that you bring the board salary to parity. You can either do that immediately or you can direct us to prepare an ordinance that phases that in over a multi-year period. And lastly, I would even suggest that you consider changing the counties as we have done in recent years with the bargaining units to reflect Marin and Napa County as comparable to San Luis Obispo. So that concludes my comments, and now I've regained my breath. And Richard, if he wants to add anything.
I'll just add one comment. As the person responsible for ensuring that the county has very qualified personnel and staffing, certainly that includes the Board of Supervisors. And in trying to ensure that we have a salary, wage, benefit package, that's going to be attractive to those folks in the community that want to really dedicate themselves to public service and leadership roles. So as you are considering this difficult issue, keep in mind that you're not just doing it in light of the fact that you're in these positions now, but you're also positioning the leadership role into the future of the county, for the future of the county, in ensuring we've got really qualified candidates that are going to throw their hat in the ring and go through the election process.
And one final comment, if you choose to do something other than the 2.82% increase in January or the phasing in over 4 years, then we will need to reintroduce the ordinance. Those are the two that were filed for today's consideration. So if you choose to do something different, what we would do is bring it back on the October 17th agenda and have a public hearing on October 24th, I think is the...
Any further comments from staff at this time? Any questions, comments from supervisors? Seeing none, I'll go to the public. Mr. Greening, and that's...
I'm Eric Greening, and certainly I appreciate the hours you all put in. I think a piece of information that could be useful to put this issue in perspective that could... I hope there's time to research and add it to the agenda of the 17th. And that is, at your present salaries, how many county employees have higher salaries than you? I've tried to figure that out looking at the budget for this fiscal year, but since it gives salary ranges, there is no way to come up with a precise figure. But either as precise a figure as you can get or something close, I think, would be just interesting information to put this particular decision in context. And perhaps also what it would be if you took either of the recommendations, at least the first year's increment with reaching parity or the 2 point whatever it is. Again, how many people, county employees, would be drawing higher salaries than you at this point? So I think that would be good information for the public to have to help evaluate the case that is to be made for whatever course of action you do or don't take. Thank you.
I think that's everybody in this room.
Not me.
Mr. Wilcox, information?
I don't have the answer to that question right now. If you wish, we could bring back next Tuesday an item that basically shows number of county employees in 30 to 40,000, 40 to 50, 50, do it in increments like that.
Oh, and that's not difficult to achieve, time-consuming?
Not for me, but, okay. Someone else is going
to. See if we can have that information available. That. Supervisor Holden, anybody else from the public wishes to comment on this? Mr. Bauer, you put on for G1?
Pardon?
Your request was for G1?
Yes, is this G1?
No. No.
Is this the one on the
$2 million? No. No, sir. This is the... $2 million we're going to spread among the supervisors. Okay, Supervisor Ovid?
Yeah, I was just
close to the public at this time. And
I was going to make two corrections. One, Gail, I think, misspoke. If there's any amendments, we can do that today. Today becomes a hearing notice, and it can be held on schedule. The other thing is, I think it would be very difficult in putting out this terms of who gets paid more than us and how many, because there's so much diversity in job descriptions and what they do. And I look out there, Seabach, he gets paid more than I do and drive a fancier car. But he also has to be a certified public accountant. There's a couple others. And of course, we could do the sheriff next door. But, I think that would make it very difficult to try to analyze anything that way, because there are jobs specific that require degrees, education, other things that aren't required. And then their actual job description, what they do, is different than ours.
Although we
think we are more important than them, so.
In general terms, you would, if you took the pay, if you brought yourselves up to parity, that would put you around 83,000, and at that level, you would be getting paid less than any department head or assistant department head in the county, plus less than the higher level professional employees. We have attorneys. The high level administrative analyst tops out around $100,000 a year now, and so you'd be, you'd be in the middle of your senior management, mid management range, in terms of comparability, and as I said, less than any department head or assistant department head that you oversee.
I know the job doesn't require a degree, but you got to know how to read with all the paperwork we have.
I know. You get a headache, sinus stuff.
Well,
Ms. Bianchi,
just knowing how to read; it's also knowing how to understand what you've just read, with all of the acronyms. I mean, that in itself requires a graduate degree.
Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I can comfortably speak for my colleagues as well as myself when I say that the people sitting up here didn't do this for the monetary compensation. If we did, I think we would insist that we make a lot more than we do and a lot more than what's offered. But it is difficult to be in a position where you set your own salary. And I'm not comfortable with it, and I even suggested that maybe we look for another means of doing it, having a citizens committee or a group of department heads or elected officials other than county officials determine what that salary might be and make recommendations. Other counties do that, but they all have their issues and problems. And one thing about the way we do it is that we are consistent throughout the county in comparing all of our employees with similar employees in other counties. And it's more or less standardized and it's formula-based. And we always make those comparisons. And what I think that we need to do is continue that process for the board. And also, I think it's important, as we've done in recent years, is bring our comparable counties more in line with what San Luis Obispo County is like. We used to compare ourselves with Kern and Placer and some of the Sierra Foothill counties, and we're really not like those counties anymore. We should be comparing ourselves with other coastal counties with, as Ms. Wilcox said, similar housing costs, similar populations, and so forth. It only makes sense to do that. If we do change the county comparison mix for the board, as we've done for other bargaining units, then it does put us way under the threshold that other county supervisors are making. And I'm not comfortable making us equal all in one fell swoop. I think it would be too big of an incremental increase. So personally, what I would like to see us do is change the mix of counties, as we have done with the other bargaining units, to more reflect counties that are like San Luis Obispo County, and also bring us to parity, but do that over the course of a 2 or 3 year period so the raises are incremental instead of all at once. That would be my preference.
Supervisor Ovid?
Yeah, I guess I don't want to start sounding like, and I've been here long enough to go over how it's been done, but for Mr. Patterson's edification, first of all, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't know if it's state statute, states that the County Board of Supervisors must set their own salary at a public hearing, so we don't have a choice. And we've gone over the last number of years through all this different reiterations of committees and suggestions and everything else, in fact, the last one, which set this at a rate increase of the percentage of increase, not necessarily the increase in salary, is where we're at today, and I think everybody's been happy with it. There's been some times we wanted to go back to judges and do everything else, and of all the counties, all of them have a different mechanism, but this seems to be the most even-handed one that I think has come up with. But we don't have a choice. We have to set our own. That's the state standard. But I'll see what other board members have, because I have my thoughts too.
Okay. Mr. Lentil?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also agree with Supervisor Patterson. We have an opportunity here to link ourselves with the five counties, Santa Barbara, Marin, Merced, Napa, and Monterey. It's a standard we use for all our employees. Why would not that be the same standard we use for ourselves? I think we send inconsistent messages when we say, well, this is where the average is, this is what we want to be. And I think previous board members and Supervisor Ovid obviously has more institutional knowledge that we've gone through this process, and it seems to be somewhat awkward or convoluted. What I would propose is that we first adopt those five counties as our comparable counties, and then we have a two-year period to become equal to. So in other words, we do half the first year, and then whatever that balance would be the second year. I think the timing is right. I think it's time to say we understand that because of previous decisions, it's made it more difficult and also made it more of an impact But by having these five counties, by linking ourselves to that, I think in the future it's going to be much easier and much more defendable for people to say you are consistent, you apply the same logic and mathematics to yourself as you do to your county employees, and that would be my recommendation.
Supervisor Bianchi?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that, and I've said this, you know, I think every time we have to do this now for 8 years, I really want to bring the, and I can do it this year with a totally clear conscience, I want to bring our salaries up to head of household salary, because I would like to see younger people be able to run for this position and still, you know, still raise a family. Anyway, so I, you know, I'm supportive of using Marin and Napa and
well, see if
over
Mr.
a 2 to 3 year period.
We'll put a in form of a motion then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I would direct staff to come back, and my motion would be that the five counties include Santa Barbara, Marin, Merced, Napa, Monterey, and that we have a 2 year package that we do half the first year, and we do the balance the following year. And also, too, I think that opens up that, let's say, for the sake of discussion, those counties came down or there's room for adjustment. Whatever it is what it is. And I think we're sending a clear message, and from my perspective, it's much more defendable to say we're consistent with all our employees and what we do with ourselves.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I have a suspicion. I don't want to put words in Supervisor Lenthal's mouth, but I'm going to. I have a suspicion that he meant to say Marin rather than Merced.
I'm sorry.
Based on everything else that you had said.
I was crossing these off over here. You're right. I want to repeat that I made a mistake on Marin and Merced because we have two different proposals here with seven counties, so I was reading off the wrong list, and I apologize for that.
And I think the way, if I understand correctly, Supervisor Lenthal, you want to language it, is that for the January 2007 adjustment, it's an 11.5% adjustment, and that the following year when we bring the ordinance back, that language will reflect the five counties you just recited and bringing to parity. It may be more than 11.5 at that time.
That's correct.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. In my understanding, Mr. Ovitt.
I'm sorry, I was trying to. The question is, when you talk about this parity issue, is that inclusive of the COLA?
Now, if I may, I think what we want to do is do the 2.82 base plus, and putting it in management terms, we do a 2.82% base plus an 11.5% equity adjustment, and then we...
And that would be as of January 1?
For January the 1st, 2007. And then that would be language, I think, that's consistent with what you've been talking about, and that would leave... Until we know additional information a year from now, that would leave about an 11.5% adjustment to come January the 1st, 2008.
I have to clarify. I think I did apples and oranges in the staff report. If you gave yourself the 2.82, you would be 15% behind the existing five counties. But you are 23% behind now the five that you want to go to. So it actually would be an 11.5% now, and then whatever it ends up to bring you to parity. So it was the first way I said.
I still second.
Let me get a point for clarification, because I think there's two different things we're dealing with as parity. Is the parity at 11.5%, Mr. Lenthal, on the motion?
For the first year.
Okay, and then the 2% COLA also?
No.
No.
So it's only 11.5% to include a COLA, then it has to be, the ordinance would have to be written different.
Right. You'll reach parity at the end of the second year is what you're trying to tell us.
That's correct.
Yeah. So 11.5 for 07, and then whatever the number is to reach parity, the comp county average using the five that you gave us for 08.
That's my recommendation with the substitution of Merced. I misspoke and put the wrong county in.
Is that the ordinance that's before him?
No.
Okay. So if this is not the ordinance that's before you, I look at council, but can they reintroduce today with those corrections and still have this matter heard on the 17th?
Assuming legally you could reintroduce it today, assuming that you could redraft the provisions of the ordinance to provide what the motion says. But I think the recommended or the preferred procedure would be to make the motion today, direct the staff to come back with the appropriate language, and have it on the next agenda for reintroduction.
Which next agenda?
17th.
2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, on the 17th. Okay, so then the motion needs to also include continuing this to the 17th to be reintroduced at that time.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Okay.
Madam Clerk, thank you.
And the second concurs?
Yes.
For clarification, the motion is just to introduce the ordinance, correct? We're not giving ourselves a raise today.
Correct. The public hearing would be on October 24th.
Okay. It doesn't take effect until January 1 anyway.
Oh, no. For my reason of supporting or not, I want to support it because it's an ordinance to be heard on the 17th and not necessarily approving a raise for ourselves today.
I just want to clarify. I think you're 30 or 60 days. So just for Supervisor Bianchi, is it 30 or 60 days following?
60.
So it would be October, November, so January.
So just technically speaking, though, what the board's doing today, if it adopts this approach, is continuing the item for reintroduction on the 17th, and then the hearing on the actual ordinance to adopt the ordinance or reject it would be the following week on the 24th.
Are we clear now, Madam Clerk? Roll call, please.
We are. Mr. Linthal.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Shajian.
Aye. Next item, please.
Okay, hold on here just one second. The next item on your agenda is item E1. This is a request to approve a budget adjustment transferring funds from the Planning and Building Department to the Road Fund to cover construction costs of the Main Street Cambria Streetlight Project and seeking direction from the board regarding supplemental funding to complete the project. This is in the 2nd District.
Thank you, Chairman Asajian. Chuck Stevenson, Division Manager, Long Range.
Chuck, is your mic on?
It's on.
Okay. Maybe get a little closer.
Jim Lopes will be providing the staff report for this item.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Jim Lopes, Planning and Building Department. Streetlights were planned as part of the Cambria Main Street Enhancement Project to provide night lighting and safety for pedestrians along almost a mile of sidewalk and crosswalks that are installed between the east and west commercial villages between Cambria Drive and Burton Drive on Main Street in Cambria. Since streetlights are not a high-priority improvement in the County Road Fund, the Planning and Building Department applied for a transportation enhancement grant to fund the project in 2001. The grant was not allocated until last year to fund the project. The streetlights are intended to encourage walking during evenings by providing safety for seeing hazards and features of people. The primary reason that the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments approved the grant was to promote alternative transportation by diverting vehicle trips to walking. In the middle of this corridor is the former elementary school, which is likely to become a community and arts center that will attract all ages, and streetlights will encourage walking to the site. The streetlights project implements one of the smart growth principles that your board adopted in 2005. To create more walkable communities. Walking also has health benefits, especially for youth to avoid obesity, which links this project to another county initiative your board recently initiated. We have a funding shortfall of $68,950 for the project due to rapid inflation in materials and labor during the 4 years since the grant was approved. Due to shortfalls in Caltrans budgets, the allocation of the grant was delayed until the 2005-06 fiscal year. Caltrans has allocated $250,000 for construction. Your board budgeted $10,000 in our budget this year, and that was based on an earlier cost estimate. The project is currently estimated at $328,950. So we are now underfunded, $68,950. We are requesting that a budget adjustment be approved and the funds be transferred to the Public Works Department for completion of the project. That concludes my comments. If you would have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you. Any questions to staff members? Seeing none, go to the public at this time. First request to speak is Ann Wyatt, followed by Michael Thompson.
Hello, I'm Ann Wyatt, Chair of the North Coast Advisory Council. First of all, I would like to thank your board and your staff for funding and the continuing work on our Main Street Improvement Project. The completed project promises to improve traffic flow, safety, and aesthetic on our Main Street. We're looking forward to the completion and an end to long road delays. With the initial project completion nearing, I'm here to convey ongoing North Coast Advisory Council support for street lighting and to ask that you approve funding for the north side lights not covered by the current grant per staff request today. Lighting has been among the more contentious issues that we've discussed in the last years, and there has been general community and council support for lights. Many issues have been raised, however. These include night sky protection, rural character and aesthetic protection, energy use, cost, and payment source. Over 4 years, we have studied lights. We have studied spacing of lights, types of lights, timers and shielding, and other things to address these concerns. We believe we've helped choose the best available lighting to meet the project primary goals of public safety and pedestrian access to our Main Street. I would suggest that Cambria residents and visitors will be well served by having its main thoroughfare safe and accessible, welcoming to all those in vehicles and pedestrians. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Mr. Thompson, followed by Marjorie Ott.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Michael Thompson. I'm a resident of Cambria. I own a small business just off the project area on Burton Drive, and I'm a director of the Chamber of Commerce in Cambria, and I'm here to voice my support for the proposal. I think an adequate lighting system is essential to our tourism activities. The area of the project has many fine restaurants and lodgings, and I think it's important that we safeguard the walkways for our tourists who come to visit us, who provide us with their hard-earned dollars for entertainment and lodging. And I think it's important for the safekeeping of our residents who will be walking in the area. I know Ann walks all the time, and she's a person who is very supportive of the proposal. And also, I think from a law enforcement public safety standpoint, I think it's important because from my background in Southern California, I'm aware of the fact that good lighting is a deterrent to criminal activity. And we're fortunate that we have a low crime rate in our area, but the last number of burglaries that we had several months ago were all committed in areas with no lighting. And I think it's important that that for our merchants that we have adequate lighting for their well-being. And I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Ms. Ott, followed by Richard Murphy.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Marjorie Ott, and I am Vice President of the Cambria Chamber of Commerce, an alternate on the North Coast Advisory Council, and owner of the Lullaberry Inn on Main Street. Now, my bed and breakfast happens to be outside the limits, and I need lights, but that's not why you're here today. But we do have, I'm very supportive of this, and I want to thank Jim Lopes for working so patiently with our council. And I wholeheartedly concur with the statements that Ann Wyatt made. I have many guests who comment how much they love our community, but they do find it difficult to walk. And they walk over to the, I'm in the East Village, so they take in the East Village, but it's very hard for them to walk down to the West Village because there are no lights. And when we have that sidewalk completed, I know more of them will want to walk down to the West Village. So I think it is very important to have the lights. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Murphy, followed by Richard Macedo.
Good afternoon. Richard Murphy. I'm with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, programming staff. Just very briefly, I wanted to be here today just to provide our support for this project. The Slocog Board, I recognize this project as a discretionary enhancement funding program as an important project. Certainly want to see it move forward. There is a required 11.47% local match for every dollar on this project. And we just want to make certain that the federal funds that have been committed to this project aren't lost back to the state. There isn't an opportunity at this point to reprogram these federal funds, these federal enhancement funds, elsewhere in the county. They either go with this project or they go back to the state, and the time and the clock is kind of ticking on this project. So we're just anxious to see this move forward and also support the next item where the Public Works Director is asking to get this project out to advertise. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Macedo?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Richard Macedo. I live in Cambria full-time for the last 8 years and part-time since 1957. I'm speaking as a private citizen today on an issue that's very close to my heart. During the last several years, I have observed tourist-serving women and men walking on Main Street home from their jobs in restaurants and motels late at night. These are folks that sometimes cannot afford a car or don't have access to transportation. I have observed these people personally over the last 8 years at late night coming home from other meetings, and I know that the safety issue for these folks is one of the unspoken things, and that's why I'm bringing it up. So I ask that you approve the funding for the lighting augmentation for the safety of both the general public and those who cannot afford to drive to and from work, particularly at night. And I thank you for your consideration of this.
Thank you. Good to see you here. That was the last request to speak. At this time, I will close to the public and bring it back to supervisors. And let me start by making a comment here, if I may.
You certainly may.
I'm supportive of this, even though I know that in our own districts we have a shortage of funding to finish a project. I know I have one in Oceano where we did tell the community about drainage problems and end up solving that problem and putting a sidewalk in, but we fell short. But I'm not going to do that comparison. I'm happy to support this as a going-away present for Ms. Bianchi. But the only problem I have is that I don't want to see this come from the Public Works Fund, because I think the additional money we gave this to Public Works, we're still playing catch-up. My preference will be that we get this money from contingencies and not disturb the funding that we made available this year for Public Works to bring several roads that need attention for many, many years to the specs and not create any more problem than there is. So I'll be happy to support this as long as the funding is coming from the contingencies. With that, Ms. Bianchi?
Well, that sort of tells you what I should make the motion. I move staff for recommendation.
Second.
And are we going to say where the funding comes from?
Well, it's in the staff recommendation, planning and building and general fund contingencies to the road fund.
And the second agrees with that. A roll call, please. Mr. Lanthal, I'm sorry. Motion made by Supervisor Bianchi, seconded by Supervisor Lanthal. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Lanthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. It's unanimous, and thank you. Thank you, folks, for coming here all the way from Cambria.
And thank you, board members. This has been a long, long project. And it was, I have to add, it has not been our staff that, you know, fiddled around with this. In the olden days, people put utility lines in Main Street willy-nilly. And when it came time to redo Main Street, lo and behold, they found all sorts of stuff under that asphalt. And so, I could go on for another 5 minutes over all the things that happened. And so I'm really happy that this
is. Don't worry, this isn't the last gift we're going to give you. So, with that, we shall continue for the next item, please.
The next item on your agenda is item F1. This is submittal of plans and specifications, which have been clerks filed, for Main Street Cambria Streetlight Contract Number 300338 for board approval and advertisement of the construction bid, 2nd District.
Okay, would it be Mr. Gibson?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, George Gibson, Public Works Department. Thank you for the money. We'd like to advertise this project for you, and if you agree, we'll advertise it and get some bids for you.
No problem.
Well, that's a nice, good, short staff report.
Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, Ms. Bianchi, your motion?
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Bianchi, seconded by Supervisor Ovid. A roll call, please.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. And with that, the last item for today, Madam Clerk, if you'll introduce that.
The last item for today is item G1. This is consideration of a resolution establishing funding and additional staffing for efforts associated with the Los Osos Wastewater Project and approve a budget adjustment in the amount of $2 million from general fund contingencies for the project. Recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Thank you. Mr. King.
Is this on?
Push your red button and the green button on the...
Good afternoon, board members. I'm Noel King, Public Works Director, and we're here to talk about Los Osos for a little bit. The background on this issue is that back in February, Assemblyman Sam Blakesley approached the county and asked the question, what would it take for your board to support legislation that involved transferring the authority of the sewer project to the county? At a June 19th, 2006 board meeting, you essentially established what those terms and conditions would have to be for that support. You had several key terms of acceptance in there, and I wanted to just remind everybody of four of those right now. Number one, agreement that in the absence of property owner's commitment to pay for the project, as demonstrated in a Prop 218 vote, the county would have no further responsibilities or obligations for the project. Number two, agreement that the CSD's liabilities would remain their own and not be transferred to the county. Number three, the CSD would suspend further actions on the project to avoid duplication or cross-purpose efforts. And number four, the county would develop the project in the manner that it deems appropriate within the confines of applicable laws and regulations. So you gave the assemblyman those terms and some other ones. After several months of back-and-forth negotiations and discussions, on September 20, AB 2701 became law. It was approved unanimously by both the Assembly and the Senate. Back at that June 19, 2006 board meeting, your board also endorsed a strategic plan that we would follow in carrying out this project if it in fact did become law. That project is detailed on pages 11 to 13 of the June 19 staff report, which is now posted on our project website for anybody that wants to read that. That website address, the quickest way to get there is to go to www.slocounty.ca.gov, and then there's a quick link to the Los Osos Sewer Project. So the main county website, slocounty.ca.gov, and then hit the quick link for the Los Osos Sewer Project. That website and that report addresses the project scope, schedule, and budget, and it also is the place where anybody, any individual or organization that has inquiries about the project as we start into it, we want them to funnel their inquiries or comments through that website, and then we can address them in an orderly manner. And we also have an inquiry there where if people want to be placed on a mailing list as we have important information that comes out in the future on our efforts, we can send it out to the mailing list.
Excuse me, Noel, is that a snail mail or email list?
You know, I'm assuming it's email, but I don't know any different right now.
Okay, thank you.
I think we'd have to ask for a few more positions than we're already asking for here if it was going to be regular mail.
That's what
The snail mail is endangered species in Los Osos.
Create our own post office.
Yeah. I wanted to take just a minute or two and talk about what our process is going to involve at a very high level and hopefully not get into a detailed discussion of that today. But we are going to be doing several concurrent activities in order to get through this process quickly. We're going to be doing alternative site reviews, including pros and cons analysis of each site. We're going to be Prop 218 proceedings, We're going to be doing the CEQA process, lots of permitting issues, and other agency involvement with various other agencies. There's a sequence of project milestones that you can track through our efforts here. The first one is the special legislation being approved. That happened on September 20th, as I said. Next up in the order that these things would occur would be conferring with the CSD board on scope-related objectives and conferring with the CSD board on possible interagency agreement items. Those discussions have already started. Next would be formation of a technical advisory committee to work with us. We see that coming to your board probably in mid to late November with a proposed framework for that committee and bylaws, having you endorse that, and then this would be a MADIAC committee, so the clerk would advertise for interested parties to fill the positions, and then we would come back in December sometime and have you make those appointments so that we'd be ready to go when the bill becomes effective in January. Next up would be, well, a whole lot of work, and then a Prop 218 assessment vote that we're right now thinking would probably be in August or September of 2007. And if that measure fails, we're going to come to you with a recommendation that we're out of the project, or it'll be automatic. If it passes, however, we will continue on. We'll have to do a supplemental EIR with all of the top alternatives being treated co-equally, because we want the have the ability to carry out any of the final alternatives when we go to the community advisory election, which is next up. When we go to that election, we want every project on that ballot to be doable. And we want to have a very good cost estimate of what each one of those alternatives would be before we have that advisory election. And lastly, the final project implementation recommendation to your board after that advisory election. We would take into account everything we know, what the community is telling us, and then we would make a recommendation to you. Now, the Prop 218 election would be property owners only who would be subject to the assessments, but the advisory election will be property owners and non-property owners, and we'll break down the results of that election and give it to you in both categories so you have that information when the time comes. This process is planned in detail, and it's important that it be carried out efficiently, because every month that goes by on this project, the construction cost is going up approximately $1 million on this thing. Today's board action is specifically for the purpose of providing the county resources required to carry out these project efforts. They include appropriating $2 million from general fund contingencies, adding two additional engineering positions to the public works budget, designating Pava Ogren as the project director, and amending Mr. Ogren's salary in recognition of significant additional workload that he'll be taking on in addition to his ongoing duties of the deputy director position. These actions are consistent with the supplemental resource requirements that we talked to you about last June, and that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. King. Any questions, comments for Mr. King? Seeing none, go to the public at this time. First request to speak, Mr. Greening, followed by David Dugan.
I'm Eric Greening, and I find it somewhat unusual in a staff report to see an actual prediction of the amount of overwork a person is being expected to take on. And knowing what's going to be involved, that may be an underestimate, particularly since Mr. Ogren is going to be expected to keep going with some other duties. And I know, for example, he's been involved with the Paso Robles groundwater banking issue and some of these other things, which, where I hope we won't lose him. But on the other hand, I hope we won't lose him to overwork and stress as well. As I say, this it looks rather strange to see an individual named in a staff report with a forecast that this person is being set up for overwork. I have a few other questions in terms of what is or is not covered in the $2 million. The mention of CEQA and agency compliance and so on hits on a couple of issues that I want to be sure are covered. One is that whatever project configuration is chosen, there is going to be a huge amount of excavation in an area that is full of cultural resources. Does this $2 million include adequate financial resources to deal with this according to the law? Does it include the costs of SB 18 consultation and all of the follow-through and mitigation that is necessary? And we need to recognize that some of the issue is going to actually happen on private property with the laterals, assuming something other than a step program is chosen. There will be thousands of laterals, and many of them will be being worked on simultaneously. So there are huge cultural issues, and I just want to be sure that consultation happens at the earliest stages, that when the project costs are fleshed out for the different alternatives, it includes costs of cultural mitigation, and we recognize that the best mitigation is avoidance, even if it means changes in route, etc. The other big issue, then, is biological. Does this include work on the habitat conservation plan, which has been fairly well stalled? And, of course, part of its increments will have to be determined, again, by the actual shape of the project, the location of the treatment plant, etc. But, again, we need to know that that biological picture is complete. In that connection, I would ask whether the Technical Advisory Committee will include people with cultural expertise, including indigenous people, and will it include people with biological expertise to help steer the habitat conservation plan? We just need to plan ahead to make sure that that whole picture is considered, or there's no project that can move forward in a timely way. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dugan, followed by Al Barrow.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. First thing I have to say is that I heard there was a 218 vote going to take place before we know the scope of the work, where the plant's going to be, or what it's going to cost. That's going to come before the advisory vote. Now, to me, it seems that you should have that information before you ask the property owners to vote on their properties for a certain amount of money. It's open-ended. Are we going to be able to tell these property owners what we expect this project to cost? We can't ask them to vote themselves into pains for something that they don't know the cost of. And so whenever you talk about first the 218 and then the scope of the works and what's going to be presented to them and then an advisory vote, it seems backwards to me. We need to know how much it's going to cost, where it's going to be before the 218. And then you have your 218 and your advisory, whichever comes first. I don't care, but the property owners need to know what they're voting for. Secondly, the county staff needs to clear their mind of preconceived concepts, whether it's gravity system or step system, whether it's ponding or it's the MBR system. They need to not think that, well, this is what we're going to run with right off the bat. They have to clear their minds of the fact they can't be affected by lobbying of certain people saying, oh, this will be faster, this will be quicker. No, CEQA. CEQA is the guidelines for this. Also, NEPA and the EPA guidelines for affordability. There's policies that have been handed down for sustainability, energy conservation. And this county has a chance to do what this current LLCSD board wanted to do, was to have a system put in place that would be looked at by other communities as something forward-thinking. And taking in all considerations, water reuse, maybe wetlands creations, whatever. But this staff has to erase from their minds any preconception of what this project should be and start from ground zero, looking at all alternatives first, find out what their costs are going to be, and then present to 218. I would advise that. The spending of the $2 million, thank you. Los Osos needs this kind of something to be done. We can't do it on our own. It's perfectly obvious our board is not up to it. And so I really do encourage you that this expenditure, but do it with a clear mind. Thank you.
Mr. Dugan, I'll let Mr. King respond to your questions. But your first question, no doubt in my mind, that's exactly what we're doing with this money, to put 218 in place to tell you what exactly you're voting for. I don't think it will be successful otherwise. And I speak from experience. That's what we did in Oceano with 218. We took a whole year with the community, did a study as how is it, what's going to cost, what we're going to do. The whole schmear was pretty much laid out there for the community to say, okay, if I support it, this is what I'm supporting. Otherwise, I think we're wasting this $2 million. And let Mr. King respond after Mr. Al speaks. But that's exactly, in my thinking, where this money is going to be able to bring that information to you. Mr. Barrow?
Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, and I have read the previous documents from 1987, the 11 years that the county had the project before, and they attempted two conventional treatment systems, mechanical systems with gravity collection, and then the CSD took it over for 8 years, and they tried one of each, and that leads us to the present day. The top two issues are going to be location and cost. If the county cannot bring a project together that the community can afford, you will not get a 218 vote passed. And I think that's a consideration of the practicality of it all. It's really important. The character of the people that are on the technical advisory committee will go a long way to solving that problem. And I know Dr. Tom Ruhr, soil scientist, Cal Poly, has been on two technical advisory committees that were formed by a board of supervisors. One was a nitrogen study, the other was an alternative study. And these are the kind of people that are up to speed, that have had 10, 15 years on these projects. We should have those kind of qualified people on the technical advisory committee. I believe the notion that the construction cost going up $1 million a year assumes that there's a certain amount of cost for the overall project. And I don't know if he's assuming 10% or whatever. Sounds like $100 million plus. I also realize that Pavel Ogren is associated with Montgomery Watson, the previous contractor, and that the staff from the wastewater committee moved over to Lopez Dam and has been working with Pavo directly on that. So there's an appearance for me of a conflict, and I think we should be careful about that and make everything really clear that we are going to evaluate everything in a fair and even manner. And I think you have to take into account that new technology is available for us. We also have to take into account private money is available. I haven't heard the word private money. Turnkey is something that is available. I know it to be available. I know Pentair Pumps is interested. I know there are other companies that would be able to come to the table. You also have a $6.5 million debt that you have to wrap into any project, according to the State Revolving Fund, if you get State Revolving Fund money. So I think siting 218, CEQA, those permits are all good. I don't know what the interagency agreement is, but I think it should be spelled out in writing. It shouldn't be just something, passing stuff back and forth. And with that, I wish you well. I don't envy you.
Thank you. That was the last request to speak. Does anybody else would like to comment on this item? Seeing none, close it to the public at this time. Mr. King.
Thank you. I made a lot of notes, but I can barely read them. Let's see what I can do here. Regarding Mr. Greening's comments, he was asking if the mitigation efforts for the cultural resources are included in the $2 million. No, they are not. In fact, the work on the supplement to complete the supplemental EIR is not included in the $2 million. And that leads into the question of the timing of the Prop 218 election versus the advisory election. We're doing the Prop 218 election first for several reasons. But to allay Mr. Dugan's fears, the amount will not be open-ended. That would be illegal. We will have, by the time we have that election, we will have publicity out to the community that will be generated and endorsed by the technical committee. It's not information coming from the Public Works Department. And it will talk about each of whatever the final alternative projects are at that point in time. And we will have a rough cost estimate at that point in time. Based on that, we will come up with a specific funding amount for a 218 election. If that election is successful, we will keep working. We're not going to spend the entire $2 million prior to the election. We don't want to spend our $2 million if we don't have to spend it. If there's not going to be a project, we want to minimize the county's investment in this. So if the election is successful, we will continue on with the environmental work. We will have to come back to your board and talk about a bridge loan of some sort for the final environmental work and the design and so forth, but it'll be a mechanism at that point where we know that the county can recover its costs. Up until the point where we have a successful Prop 218 election, we have no guarantee that we're going to recover this money. Basically, it would become a grant. So the mitigation measures that Mr. Greening was talking about could be very costly, but they'll be part of the construction budget that would be funded after a 218 election, hopefully through a favorably negotiated long-term loan, whether it be from the state revolving fund loan or some other source. The HCP, I can't answer exactly what the timing would be on that. It will absolutely be a part of this project. I think there will be initial work done prior to the 218 election. I think it'll be completed sometime after the 218 election as a requirement for the project. We're not certain what the advisory committee will be made up of at this point in time. We have some preliminary ideas. We'll be presenting the framework of that to the Board of Supervisors, but for their final approval in probably November. But we're envisioning three pods within this committee: an environmental group, a finance group, and a technical engineering group. And any more details than that will be worked out later. But I will tell you that the focus of this committee is going to be very specific. It's going to look at the alternatives that are presented and develop a pros and cons analysis of those alternatives that will be made available to the public. They're not going to be making a recommendation on the preferred project alternative. That's our responsibility. Mr. Dugan, let's see. He was talking about clearing our mind of preconceived notions. We are doing that. That's exactly one of our themes. However, we have very limited amount of time, and we have $2 million seems like a lot of money, but it's not in the effort that we're going to do here. We need to be clear on what our scope of work here is. We're not going to develop new technologies and try to convince other agencies that those new technologies are acceptable. We're going to develop the concept for this project as if we're going to be the ones that operate it forever. We know that if it's built, we'll operate it for at least 3 years under the terms of the legislation, and after that, it remains to be seen. So this is our system that happens to be in Los Osos, and so we're going to approach it accordingly. In the strategic plan that was presented to your board on June 19th, it said very clearly that our approach is not going to include considering anything other than gravity collection systems. We'll be very open-minded about location, final treatment technologies, but what we're going to do is attempt to implement all the available information that's out there already. We're not going to create new information. We're not going to create new design concepts. We're going to look at the design that was in Tri-W. We're going to look at the design that was in the Metcalf and Eddy project that we had back in the late 90s. We're going to look at the Ripley report and see what we can glean out of that as far as transmitting it to a different type of a project location. But we are not intending to consider such as step steg. We're looking only at gravity collection. We don't have time to do. We do not have time to do alternative technologies, and we don't have funding to do alternative technologies. So that is not in our scope. Mr. Dugan talked about affordability. We're not going to know. We're not going to be able to determine what this project is going to cost once it's built. We can give you a worst-case scenario, and that's what people will have when they vote. But we have lines on several different types of grants. Some of the grants that we're looking at could specifically be targeted to people who qualify as low income and would help supplement their assessments every year. Other grants would be direct credits against the project cost or against the assessments for everybody. But there is no way to tell you exactly what the final bottom line is going to be on this project. We can tell you it's going to be very expensive. It's going to be like having a car payment without having a car. I mean, the question is just how good of a car it's going to be. but we take that issue extremely seriously. Part of our interagency agreement with the CSD, we envision we'll be using some of the $2 million to work with them and help even finance some of their staff to do a joint effort on grants research and grant solicitations. I think that that's one thing that the CSD and the community can do better than us. We have money, you have time and energy and information, and I think we can pool our resources there. Mr. Barrow said that the two key things here are going to be location and cost, and I absolutely agree. I think this is going to come down to what the potential locations are of the treatment plant and what the cost is going to be for the voters. That's it. And we're going to do everything we can working with the other agencies involved, such as the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So at the time of the 218 election, the property owners know what the alternative will be as well as they can if the vote fails. It's fair that they know that. And we're going to try and make that information, see that that information is made very clear. Mr. Barrow said that Pablo Ogren is associated with Montgomery Watson. He's no more associated with them than I am in that they are doing the construction management right now on our Lopez water treatment plant. I don't believe we will need their expertise, we will need their information on the project that they designed. However, we're not envisioning using them as a direct consultant. We're envisioning using Corolla engineers to coordinate our efforts, and they would be a sub to Corolla, only to provide Corolla with some of the information that they're going to need to do their job, because they're the ones that have it. He mentioned a turnkey process. We've looked into that. We, by contract law in this state, we cannot do design-build projects for this type of project. If we could, we would look into it. We were really, in fact, when I was in a conference in San Diego about 6 months ago, I met with large water agency down there, San Diego Water Agency, because they had done a design-build-operate water treatment system recently. And so I basically picked their brain on how they approached that and what they had to do. Because they're not the type of government agency we are, they were allowed to do that. But after further research, it's been determined that we cannot. And yes, the interagency agreement with the CSD, should there be one, will be in writing. It will be first approved by the CSD Board of Directors. Then it will come to your board for final approval. Those are all the notes I had on the comments.
Mr. King, why would I support a 218 without knowing what it's going to cost me?
Well, I'm telling you, we are going to have a fixed limit, and it will be our best estimate.
Okay. I misheard you.
Now,
would that...
Let me clarify, though, just so you're certain on this, and I'm making up numbers here. Let's say that we assume that or estimate at the time of the election where we have no design. So the estimates are very rough. Let's assume I'm just making up a number from nowhere. Let's assume that this is going to cost $100 million. Or we think that will be close enough that when we do a final project and we learn what our final mitigation requirements will be from the supplemental EIR and we learn what our final financing package will be, which will all take probably a year after the 218 vote to nail all those things down. Let's say it ends up costing $130 million. So we're $30 million short from the 218 vote. We have other sources of funding that we go to that we can use to supplement the funding.
Like what?
Oh, like different types of bonds that are issued up and above the state loan, for example. We can do other kinds of assessments. We're talking about, and they would have to be voter approved, or there are other types that are out there that don't have to be voter approved. And so there are different options to round out the funding. We don't know, we haven't identified them all at this point, but we're certain that if we get a substantial amount of the funding through a 218 vote and then the final project numbers come in higher, we can round out that funding.
I just hope that this $2 million will bring us more information than what I think it will, and it just doesn't serve the purpose for me to be supporting this amount of money, not better prepare ourselves for a 218 from the point of educating the public of Los Osos who are going to absorb this amount and saying yes, that knowing that it can be even much larger amount?
Well, they will have the best estimate that we can make before there is a system design and before there is a final supplemental EIR that indicates all of the requirements that will be necessary. That level of estimate, it'll be the best estimate we can make on those circumstances. And it will take many millions of additional dollars to get to that point.
Okay, we have several lights. Let me go in order of appearance. Supervisor Lentil, followed by Patterson and Bianchi.
Mr. King, I really appreciate your candor, and I know it's difficult to answer some of these questions because it is so complex, and you've broken down the components, I think, the best you can under the circumstances. I think with respect to Mr. Greening's question about Pavo, I also want to publicly thank him for all the heavy lifting he's done with you and the staff to work with this. I did have the opportunity to participate in a few of these meetings, and I am confident that Pavo is up for the challenge, that he won't overwork or stress out, Eric, if that was your focus of your question. And I think we have the right people involved to do this, and I support this because I think we're finally going to get some information out. We don't have all the answers. Certainly, this is going to literally be a work in progress, but I am confident that our staff is going to be much farther down the road with the amount of information that the voters are going to need to make an educated decision for the 218 vote when the time comes to do that. I would like to say that we have more answers. And
I hope so.
I share some of your concerns, but I think we are on the right track and that we are going to be there to provide the information needed to make an educated decision.
Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. King, in the event that the regional board does approve an alternative type treatment system, one that would allow for a different type of collection than a gravity system, and as I understand it, there's not much of that gravity system already installed. I realize it's been designed, but there's not much installed out there currently. Why the apparent resistance to looking at a collection system other than a gravity type collection system? Because I understand that it's that component of the system that causes it to be so much more expensive than perhaps an alternative type.
Yeah. Again, I don't want to get into too much of a technical discussion here because I'm not geared up on it, but I will tell you that, again, I mentioned that we would propose this project as if we will be the ones that operate it. There's no community like this anywhere in this country that operates a system like that. We've heard this conversation so many times with the ponding and with different types of systems out there. There's always a new, better way, but then when we come down to it, we say, show us a like community that has successfully operated a system like this, and then we can consider it. We don't believe there's anything out there with a track record, and this is too big of an investment to make on something that's not proven, in my opinion. That's really the essence of it. But on another thought that I have on the matter is that, kind of a personal thought, this has been going on for some 30 years. The people out in Los Osos are all consumed by it. It totally stressed the community. And when we finally, hopefully, get this project to the point where we're actually going to build a sewer, I would like the people to know that they abandon their septic tanks in their backyard and they don't have to think about it anymore, other than their high monthly bills, which are definitely going to be high. But I don't want them to have to think about a program where they're going to have maintenance continuing on their septic systems, their high-tech collection systems in their backyard, and be invasive. And we want this thing to be a process where when we build the sewer, we're done with it, and the people don't have to continue to be involved in it. And these things are high-tech. They have to be maintained. There are issues out there. What if something fails? Are the property owners going to be personally responsible? Or is the county going to be responsible if there's a failure and the regional board has to do sightings? We just don't really think it's wise to go in that direction.
Ms. Bianchi. And at the end of your comments, you're welcome to make a motion.
I was going to. I'd just like to remind everybody that the 500-pound gorilla in the room that nobody ever wants to discuss is the Regional Water Board and the State Water Board. We can come up with all of the alternative systems in the world, and they have the absolute final say. If they don't approve it, that is pretty much, you know, the death knell for that particular type of system, whatever it is. So with that, I would make a motion. There's two motions here, two parts of the motion. The first one is to approve the attached budget adjustment by a 4/5 vote, which would establish the Los Osos Wastewater Project budget of $2 million from general fund contingencies. And two, approve the attached resolution, which would increase the Public Works Department position allocation list by adding one engineer four and one engineer one or two or three positions. Designate Deputy Public Works Director Paavo Ogren as the Los Osos Wastewater Project Director and amend the salary range for employee position class 00662, Deputy Public Works Director Administration.
Second to both.
Question on the motion. Say everything is positive, we're thinking positive, but in worst case scenario, and we come to a dead end, are we going to be able to reclassify everybody back to going back to their normal job titles and incomes?
Pardon me. That will not be an issue based on the age of some of our engineering staff and pending retirements and so forth. If this project terminates with an unsuccessful 218 vote, it won't be a problem with these positions.
Would that a roll call, please? Madam Clerk.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. That concludes today's meeting. This meeting is adjourned.
In 2 weeks. No meeting next week.
That's right.